Hype Podcast. This is a very special Gilmore Girls episode, and it's the last one, Tia. I don't know how we're going to do this, but we're going to do this. This is the last in our series of Gilmore Girls rewatch episodes, all about the original show and now the Netflix revival. We are here to talk to you about fall today. I'm Marima, and I have with me, as always, the Hype Girls, Pam and Selena. Hey guys, how you doing?
Good. It's been a long time. Getting here.
Yeah, I can't believe it's
like
over.
A year, right?
Yeah,
I can't.
Has it been a year? We're gonna have to find those original text messages of me harassing you guys into doing this because this is my fault. I apologize. Oh, you're welcome. I'm not sure which one.
You know, if anything, I was an enabler, so it makes you feel
That's
better.
True. And Selena didn't know she was getting.
Selena was just like, "Yeah, I guess I'm just gonna do it because these two will kill me if I don't."
Yeah.
No, well, it's been great.
I don't know what we're going to do, though. We're going to have a Gilmore-sized hole in our lives.
We're going to have Gilmore fatigue is what we'll have.
We probably won't feel it till like, next month, but it'll be there.
Yeah, I feel I might already have it. I'm not sure. Anyway, we're going to talk all about Fall today, the final episode of the Netflix revival, which means that Selena has watched the whole thing. Which, what? Please explain. How do you feel,
you guys? I still feel like there's like probably stuff that I don't know or don't understand, especially because I've only seen it all once. But it's a very good feeling, I have to say. Like, there's no more, there's no more like stupid me trying to make up a story that I don't know how it's gonna go. So I'm excited, I'm happy, and but you know what, I do feel weird because, I mean, and we're going to get into this, but the story doesn't feel like it's over. Like, most of what I have taken away from Fall is all of the unanswered questions. So basically, I'm still sort of in my mind, there's still more coming because it doesn't feel final at all. And
so instead of Selena's predictions, we'll do Selena's unanswered questions at the end of this. How about that?
It'll be all of you guys' answered questions, I'm sure. But yeah, no, it's like I was expecting this big feeling of completion, and instead I'm just like, okay, so when's the next, you know, special? Like, when is the next episode? I don't get it. So
yeah, well, you never know. The Netflix people have said, I mean, if anyone's to do more, we're never going to say no.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. Okay, so let's start right there. I feel like I should just say, first of all, for the recording, there is a huge rainstorm happening outside my house. I'm really sorry if this is getting picked up, but just consider it my tears at the end of Gilmore Girls. And to repeat my joke from before we started recording, I'm sorry it didn't happen for the winter episode, but, you know, take what you can get. So Selena, you've seen it all. Why don't you tell us, I mean, let's just jump right into it. What did you think of the show? Now that it's done,
I really liked it, you guys. Like, I kind of already said this, but I'm really, really happy that I got to go on this journey for Gilmore Girls, because it's just one of those shows that, like, it feels like I should have always watched, you know? Like, it did, and I think we talked about this too, how the first couple of seasons were like, oh, this is nice, but it's, like, just based on the structure of the show, it wasn't necessarily something that I would watch on a regular basis. Like, I would probably check back in and out to it. But then the more you watch, the more you care about these characters. And I feel like, even though what we've said about the revival, I feel like the biggest problem with the revival is that they try to pretend like no time has passed, you know, and it does really take you out of the experience. I just feel like it did round off some things really well, and it did sort of bring some of the emotional conclusions that you've been waiting for all through all these seasons home, and I really enjoyed that overall. And I feel like, I don't know, I feel really good about it. I feel really good about us taking this journey, you know.
And what about Fall in particular? How does it hold up for you?
It was a really good episode. There was I will say, we'll get into this, the beginning was like so ridiculous to me. I almost could not watch it. And I was like, this is so ridiculous, the dumbest thing in the world. Everything, I mean, Rory's beginning, not Lorelai's beginning, but everything after that was just really, really, really good. And, you know, I'm sitting there staring at the gif you put at the top of the dog, just like, oh my God.
Yeah, I had to scroll down.
You know what?
I can't handle looking
that
at
that.
That
was a special form of...
It's Jess, guys.
Why would you do
it's
that,
Jess.
Though? This is like the worst face, but the best face, but the worst
face. I thought it captured the mood quite well.
Our
I
longing
mean,
for more.
Yeah, it's kind of bittersweet, you know, melancholy. And this way we get to look at Jess.
Yeah.
So...
yeah.
I was finding it too distracting, so I had to scroll away from it.
I can't bring myself to do it. I'm just not going to know what the rest of the doc says. So it'll be all your
yeah,
fault.
Yeah, it'll be a mystery.
You're
forever.
Like stuck up there forever. But yeah, no, I mean,
it'll be a fun way to do the show.
But I feel like in general, I mean, watching them all so fast has kind of been a bit of a surreal experience. But I think fall, it's funny because I keep feeling like, I'm sure you guys did, like, oh, it's great, but it doesn't really feel like real Gilmore Girls. Like, there was really that divide sometimes with these episodes, and I feel like fall had some really iconic classic Gilmore Girls moments that we'll get into that really made me feel like the show was back, you know, right before it ended again. But that was a nice feeling, because even though I've only just started watching it, I already feel like I can identify what is like quote-unquote real Gilmore Girls and what is like a little bit gimmicky.
But a lot of that might have
to
do
with... Well, I've trained you well.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just going to say, a lot of that might just have to do with the fact that, you know, we've talked a lot about how fall, I mean, not fall, spring and summer were kind of fillers. And you can definitely feel the absence of Amy's voice because Dan took the reins on the two middle episodes. And so I think that that's why when you look at, like, the four episodes as a whole, like, winter just, it was, like, perfect because you're coming back and you get... kind of that same nostalgic, whimsical, magical feel in fall as well, that I think like Amy is kind of the only person that can really bring that to life.
Yeah, there was a weird moment watching this actually, because this is the first time that I've seen fall since I watched it for the first time, which was when I watched it after 6 hours of like straight television and too many Pop-Tarts, guys. That's a whole other story, but there was definitely a sugar crash somewhere around summer. And the moment that I noticed in this when I was rewatching, and just to jump ahead a little bit, is this is, first of all, this is the longest episode of the revival. So this one comes in about an hour and 40 minutes instead of 90 minutes like the others. And there is this moment about 40 minutes in where Lorelai dumps the backpack. She puts the sign on the pack. And the music that plays is the end credits music from the original season, that guitar riff. And, like, from that moment through the end, it felt to me like this is Gilmore Girls. Like, you know, there are a couple moments in there that were kind of jumped out at me. But for the most part, like, a lot of the things that I kind of was rolling my eyes at, like the Wizard of Oz stuff, which we'll get to, was all before that. And then, you know, we get to this end bit of the episode. And even though I have my issues with it totally, it did feel like Pam said, it kind of returned to form. It felt like Amy's voice. It felt like the show that I knew. I don't know if you guys felt that way, but it was very distinctive for me, the break, when that music started playing this time, which I didn't really pick up on the first time. But I mean, let's start with Lorelai then, because, you know, I think a lot of our discussion is obviously going to be about the final forwards, but there's kind of some stuff that happens with Lorelai and with Emily that's separate from that, and then I guess we'll get into Rory afterwards. And then we have so much listener feedback from you guys. Thank you so much for sending it in. So Lorelai, she's doing wild, except she's not doing wild. Like, she doesn't do it. Selena, you were kind of into her doing it. Were you a bit sad that she didn't, you know, even do it at all?
I mean, they were. It's Lorelai. She was
like, she walked
do
up
it.
A hill.
Like,
so
it was very in character for her. I actually loved that whole like. It, I mean, it's one of those things that maybe dragged on a little bit long with her sort of going back and forth with the women and stuff, even though I did think it was cute. But I mean, I loved how it resolved, so I didn't mind that she didn't actually get to go. And I'm glad, because like she for sure wouldn't have made it.
Yeah, totally. Would you want to talk about her phone call with Emily? Mm-hmm. There's kind of nothing really happens with her before that, except for... Yeah. Some cameo stuff that we'll get into a little later. What did you think about that resolution?
I loved it. I loved it so much. I think it's because I know we talked about when when Lorelai at Richard's funeral had that meltdown, like I was very understanding of her, and I know you guys, or at least you weren't really, and I understood both sides of it, but for sure it was a moment that really hurt Emily a lot, and this was kind of owed to Emily in a way. Like this was kind of what had to happen, because even though I still take Lorelai's side a lot of the time, it's also okay to what's that word? Like when you give in, you know, because they concede. Are so stubborn, both of them. You concede. And that was in a way what she did. And she allowed herself and Emily to have this moment together. And I thought that was really necessary and clearly just the biggest gift that she could give her mother in a way. And and I was like, it was so emotional, and it was one of my favorite moments of the revival. I'm really glad it happened.
You know, I was thinking a lot about when I was rewatching it, this idea that Lorelai could think of nothing to say to Emily at the funeral. And I think I reached the conclusion that perhaps Lorelai didn't want to give away like the mm-hmm. one part of her father that she had to herself, because he was such a hard man to love, and there were not a lot of like lovely moments between the two. Like a lot of people are so fortunate to have like many wonderful memories with their father, but I think because Lorelai and her parents never really saw eye to eye, I think that she kind of cherished a memory like this as hers. And as soon as she like were to put it out into the open, it wouldn't necessarily be hers anymore. But so I kind of like that she realized that she didn't need to be selfish with it. But watching it for this is like the third time I've watched Fall, because I also watched it with my mom so I could see her reaction to the end. I came to kind of that realization the third time. I don't know if you guys thought the same thing, but
that's a really good point. Yeah, I love that interpretation, Pam. That's sweet.
Especially
that's really
because
sweet.
It plays into what happens with Lorelai and Rory too. You know, when Lorelai tells Rory, you know, yeah, you can write your book, and she doesn't even want to read it. You know, she just kind of gives it to Rory, and it is a big episode for Lorelai, sort of maybe realizing like what's truly important, because that is right. Like Lorelai does and has through, like it's been a really consistent thing in my opinion that she has really guarded herself. And she lets people in, but she doesn't, you know, necessarily let them take stuff out, if you know what I mean. And I think with Rory in particular, like that she gives her past away for her future, if you want to get really symbolic with it. But I do think there's something to that. And for Richard and Lorelai particularly, like one of the reasons I'm so sympathetic to her is because I really feel like I understand that perspective of just, it was tough, you know, it was a tough relationship, and it was tough on Lorelai. And it was a, like, there was a reason that she'd made the choices that she made with regards to Rory and stuff. She was really hurt inside, and it didn't mean that Emily wasn't also very hurt inside, but I think Lorelai was holding on to anger as well for her dad, as well as sadness and confusion. And like, she never got to finish whatever she started with her parents, and this sort of allowed her that peace, and she gave it to Emily in the process. And I thought that was, I thought it was so beautiful. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, I look, the whole wild thing, whatever, I just, that fine. Okay, that's why we did this. I'm just going to ignore that basically for the rest of time. I just hate that storyline so much. But if we had to go through that to get this moment, I will take it every time. You know, because like you said, so this is so beautiful. What I really loved about this is also that it was a moment pre the show, you know, because we did see, I mean, and I still fall on Emily's side pretty clearly on this, on the funeral thing, which we don't need to get into again, but we did see moments of a good relationship between Richard and Lorelai in the show. And what I appreciated in this was that they gave us a moment before that to show that, exactly like you said, they had a very complicated relationship. It was often a very difficult relationship on both sides, I'm sure, but we know certainly from Lorelai's perspective, but that there were moments in there too of like a good relationship, and maybe that made the rest of it harder for her. But this relationship that we saw between them starting in season one of the show, it didn't come out of nowhere, is what this scene tells you. Like there was a basis of some, you know, there was a basis of love there, even if they didn't understand each other always. And they certainly didn't want to go about things the same way. But, you know, there was always like there were moments there, and I thought that was really beautiful to just think about.
Yeah. It also, you know, just gives you such insight into Lorelai's childhood, like how lonely she must have felt, you know, like it really brought a lot of things home.
And it's so funny I was just gonna say, it's so funny because, like you said, it is a moment that happened pre even like the Gilmore Girls that we know, but we can get kind of hints of this idea that while Richard might not have shown his love all the time, like he always kind of conceded to Lorelai a little bit more than Emily. Like there was that whole scene, and I think it's like season three or four, where Emily's trying to set Lorelai up and she's sneaking out of her bedroom window and Richard walks in and he's just like, go ahead. And she's like, thank you, daddy. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, so you get kind of like these sweet little moments, and that all kind of hints at this idea that perhaps there was a little bit more love there than Lorelai likes to let on. But of course, like, her childhood was drenched in loneliness. Like, we can't deny that. But it wasn't
of course not. It makes it bittersweet because it's nice to think that she had these moments there. But then, you know, like I said, that also makes the rest of it so much harder because she's probably thinking, why can't it be like that all the time? You know, so I really love your interpretation, Pam, of this. If you think about this as her sort of sharing this with Emily, this is definitely the first moment we get in this episode. We get a kind of Richard moment for all three characters, I would say. And this is the first one. And, you know, we've discussed a bit on these specials about how the different Gilmores are dealing with this grief. And I think we've certainly seen that Lorelai may have been a little aimless before Richard died, but certainly his death has maybe crystallized some things for her and made things more complicated for her. And definitely part of that is the grieving process. And so this moment was really necessary for us to get anything that came after it, because otherwise you would just be thinking, but wait, what about Richard? Like, what about all of that? And what about her relationship with Emily? And it was such a beautiful way to tie all of that together, I thought, even if we had to do stupid wild to get there. But it's fine, whatever. Okay, so moving on from that, the Gilmores were very separate in this episode, I feel. The three of them didn't have that much time together, which was kind of sad.
I was really sad.
Although
about
we got some nice moments.
Yeah, I was expecting them to bring it more home. Like, there was just too much Logan.
Well, we'll get to that, but I would have loved to have a Friday night dinner or something with them, you know, like just something to see them, because we don't see anyway. We'll get to Emily, but basically that phone call with Emily kind of marks the end of, you know, they have a scene a little later on about the money, but basically that's kind of like, okay, they're okay now. Like, the two of them are okay now. Who Lorelai was not okay with, of course, was Luke. We get to see Luke's freak out in this, which is just really sad, I thought, and really beautifully done. And then we get what I consider to be a very classic Gilmore moment of Luke making the, you know, I need you, like, this is all I need, everything that's here, this is all I need, I'll do anything for you, versus Lorelai's like, I think we should get married and I've already organized it, so that's happening. It just felt like Gilmore Girls to me. Did you guys feel the same?
Yeah. Scott Patterson is just the MVP of this revival. Oh my gosh. Like, he just...
Yeah?
I know he talked a little bit about how it was tough. I caught an interview when he was like, yeah, it took me a little bit to really get into Luke's character, but then I really felt that I hit something. And I was like, you can really tell that he made an effort because it's so Luke, you know? Like, he is so Luke, and especially in this episode, I just think it was every scene with him was like, yes, we're home in, like, Stars Hollow. This is Luke. This is happening. This is Luke and Lorelai. I loved it. I thought it was so great.
That's so funny. But I guess, like, if you think about it that way, in a way, Luke is kind of the heart of the town. And it makes sense because everybody congregates at Luke's. Like, so much of the story and these big pivotal moments happen around that center of the town. And for all his grumpiness, you know, and allegedly, like, wanting to, like, distance himself, he really is, like, Stars Hollow in a way. I mean, like, all of these people are, but... I mean, so much of Stars Hollow.
Oh, with the inside of this episode.
Really? Oh, wow. God, I don't even know. Yeah. It's late, you guys. Maybe that's the key to...
No, keep it going. that's so beautiful. But, I love that.
But I do think that, like, a lot of that, too, is, like, we have to give it up to also his chemistry with Lauren Graham, because they said from the beginning that the only reason that they even, like, Amy even went towards a romantic endeavor with the two is because they just had so much palpable chemistry that she couldn't not. The characters just went in that direction anyway. So it was nice to see that they brought it all back.
And a nice parallel to that last time that, you know, she asked him to marry her. But at least you got to see Luke this time, which was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, but also, just speaking of like the character chemistry, that scene that he has with Jess in the diner in Luke's, where he's explaining basically that he thinks Lorelai is going to leave him, was really heartbreaking, I thought. Yeah. Maybe even more so than his speech to Lorelai herself. When you just see this realization, like him kind of working through this thing that he's thought for, you know, maybe a little while that this was on the cards, and now that she's gone, he's thinking this is definitely happening. And you know, I think more so with Luke, and again, probably this is down to Scott Patterson, you really see the toll that this relationship has had on him. You know, you see the years that it's taken them to get to this point. And I think we will all agree there's definitely an argument to be made that this show is basically about what Amy wanted to happen, like in season 7. But the way he plays it, you feel the years, like you feel the drag in the relationship to get to this point. And I don't know, it was really, I'm not usually, as people who have listened to this show know, I'm not usually like about Luke and Lorelai, but I just thought this was so well done and really beautifully done for fans and for the characters. And, you know, there were, look, can't be positive about everything. There are a couple too many lines about like, I feel like we should already be married and it's taken us so long to get to this point. We were like, haha, yes, we know, you needed a revival, et cetera, et cetera. But those things aside, yeah. Really beautiful. So, what about the wedding, though? Did we like the wedding?
Yes, loved the wedding. And but one of my biggest problems with it was that, I mean, you wrote that Jess wasn't at the wedding. My question was, why wasn't Emily at the wedding? Like,
well, it was like a spontaneous thing. So she's not in Stars Hollow.
I know, but it feels wrong that Emily wasn't at the wedding. I think after everything.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
And after everything that Lorelai and Emily got through, like, yes, it was a spontaneous wedding. Yes, they just had whatever. But come on, like, give Emily a chance to fly into town or like even like how. And I know I get it because they've already given Emily her goodbye. And I think that was the story that like a decision to not bring her back to Stars Hollow because she'd already left at that point. But I just felt like it felt disingenuous for both Emily and Lorelai, but especially for Emily not to, you know, need to be there somehow because she's been talking about Lorelai getting married all this time. And maybe the point was that Emily had let go of that, but she's still Lorelai's mother and it still feels weird that she wasn't there.
The collection of the people at the wedding was weird anyway, like Michelle and Lane and Rory, Luke and Lorelai.
But honestly, like
that's why I said about Paris. Jess, it kind because of... they had just shown him, and obviously because he wasn't available to shoot that day, but you know, obviously Suki wasn't available to shoot that day. Like there are logistical reasons for why, but it just seemed weird.
Mm-hmm. But it didn't really bother me because here's the thing. I feel like I've been coping with fall by just filling in the blanks that I want to be there, and so I always just kind of figured that they were gonna have a bigger celebration later anyway. But I think like the saving grace for me really was that at least they woke up some people that like really should, like Michelle makes sense because he's about to leave, and Lane has always been like Lorelai's second daughter, so it was nice that it was like that they did bring in some extra people. But yeah, it is really weird that she didn't at least wake Suki up because it's like her bestie.
Suki, because she's Lorelai's best friend and made the cake, and it like makes literally no sense that she's not there. But also,
and we just saw her.
And we just saw her, so we know she's in town. And I know Emily wasn't in town. Like, I get the logistics of that, but just the image of it just feels so wrong.
Sure, I totally agree with that. I think that's a very valid point. For me, I was a little sad that we didn't get to see a big town celebration, actually. And I understand why they did it like this, but it was funny. I kept thinking about Bon Voyage and the season 7 finale and how that in a way felt a little realer to me than this, even though this was from Amy and that wasn't, because that moment, I always found that episode to be so Gilmore Girls-y, like so even after whatever happened in season 7 that people may not agree with, I always found that episode to be really great, although I know some people think it's a bit too like schmaltzy. Versus this, I don't know, it's just, it felt like kind of a letdown to not get, you know, to have this like spontaneous wedding, and yes, they say, and then we're going to have the real wedding tomorrow, and you know, we can assume like Emily will be at that and all of these people will be at that, but I don't know, I felt really sad, especially because we didn't get to see that much of Stars Hollow in their revival, and definitely not in Fall, that we didn't get that moment, because Luke and Lorelai are so much more than just, like, they are about Stars Hollow. Their romance and their relationship is so about Stars Hollow and about the people who were there. And I don't know, I watching this, I didn't really feel it the first time, I don't think, but I actually can't remember, but watching it this time, I definitely felt that absence of that big celebration. I don't know if that's just me.
I think when you compare it to Bon Voyage, definitely, because they have that scene that always makes me cry, where they're panning over all of these people that have been so important to not just the Gilmore's lives, but like to all of our lives. And it was sad that that wasn't the case. And it also kind of makes you wonder if like Amy would have included something like that had she had access to all of these people 10 years ago, because you can't deny that things would have been different. Like, everybody would have been involved. I mean, she could say all she wants that this is the way she's always envisioned it, but I can't really believe that, knowing that everybody would have been at her fingertips. It just wouldn't have made sense.
I think, and I agree with you, and I said this, and it is, I mean, everyone listening, just take my opinions with a grain of salt, because I've only watched the series once and quickly, but I did feel watching that season 7, like we talked about, in general, felt a little bit more in my taste, or like in my, like, it landed a little better with me than season 6 did, in general, and I really thought Bon Voyage was a beautiful episode, and I felt like Bon Voyage, like I said, there were a lot of unanswered questions, so I was happy we were getting the revival, but overall I felt satisfied. Like, I felt okay with that being the end. This one, I'm not okay with this being the end. I'm just like, that it opened more questions than it answered, and that really, like, it didn't feel finale-like for that reason. And I also just think, because of the structure of a day, a year in the life, like, all of the randomness that they threw into these episodes, and how you can really feel like Amy Sherman-Palladino has sort of embraced the absurdist type of her that's always been in her story, but it, that has been come back in the revival in a really big way. It just, a lot of the scenes in this episode were very throwaway, and so that makes it feel less finale-like. Like, it wasn't structured like a finale, it was just structured like the last part of a 4-part story, and that's it, you know, whereas Bon Voyage, it was a finale, and it felt like a finale all the way through. It had that melancholic, like, we know this is the end, this is the last time you see that character, this is the last time you see that character, etc., etc., that makes a finale really beautiful. And this one didn't really have that, except for Emily, obviously. Even though it was weird, it was good.
That's kind of it for Lorelai's relationships. We'll talk about the stuff with Rory when we get to her, because I think, you know, that kind of makes more sense to talk about generally with the book. The other moments that we get, Suki comes back, of course. Oh, Suki returns. It's been 2 years apparently since Suki has been there, so I now totally stand behind my point of like how outrageous that Lorelai has not found a new chef in this time. Like, what a, you know, dysfunctional human being to not have a chef for 2 years. But anyway, seeing Suki was beautiful.
Talk about your I mean, I know that Melissa McCarthy is like an A-plus actor and that she can totally do this, but talk about just coming back in and totally capturing the spirit of that character. Like, Suki scenes, and we'll get back to that, but Suki scenes were some of the ones I enjoyed the most in this revival. Like, it truly felt like Gilmore Girls in that kitchen, and I loved it.
Yeah, we had missed her, huh?
And I love her and Lorelai's friendship so much. You know, it's one of my favorite parts of the show. And I was watching those scenes thinking, like, if she had just been there the whole way through, like, just not change anything, but just have Suki in the whole revival. Like, I know that wasn't their fault, but if it had been possible, I would have loved it a whole lot more, I think. Because unlike someone like Lane, who kind of didn't land very well in this revival, you know, Suki, even though she was only there for a short amount of time, she really did.
Well, yeah, because Suki always had more to do than Lane. You know, like Suki and Lorelai's friendship, I mean, that's what made the scenes at the inn worth watching, you know.
Yeah.
Sure, we wanted to see Lorelai succeed professionally, blah, 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 whatever, independent woman. But like, but it was about her and Suki doing it together. Like, if otherwise her pursuit of this goal would not have been as interesting. It was about like the trio of her, Suki and Michelle, this like super dysfunctional group of them doing this awesome thing. And it was about those moments when Lorelai like goes into the kitchen searching for coffee and like talks to Suki. And I mean, Lorelai doesn't really have any friends, like as with Rory. So we didn't really see any of those friend moments in this revival. And they were, I found them really lacking. And you kind of, I think you're totally right. You sort of don't realize how much you've been missing it until Suki appears. And then you do think like, oh, imagine if she had just been here, you know, if she had just been in and out this whole time, like you just feel like it would have made such a difference. I don't know. But it was nice to see her anyway, obviously. Did you know that, so slight tangent, I was talking to a friend about this and I was like, obviously because Melissa McCarthy is like a huge movie star. So it's like, you know, hard to get her and things. And this person was like, oh really? What's she been in? And I was like, are you kidding me?
Where has this person been for the past like 5 years?
Yeah, I was so confused. Anyway, so yeah, she was like, no, but she's like, Gilmore Girls was her point of reference. She was like, Suki, what movies is she in? And I was like, I can't even talk to you right now because you obviously haven't seen Spy, the greatest movie of our generation. So that's fine, whatever. But like, speaking of the professional stuff, so last episode we were talking about Michelle leaving, but actually turns out Michelle probably isn't leaving because Lorelai is going to franchise with Richard's money. Who would have guessed? She's found a property. How surprising. Selena, did you kind of see this coming? No, because you thought Michelle was leaving.
Yeah, I was sure Michelle was leaving. Like by the end of it, I'm glad you clarified because I still wasn't sure that he was staying. Like I feel like maybe, I don't know why that wasn't clear to me. But I'm glad
I think it's definitely implied. Like
yeah, I think so.
Like
too.
she says when she wants the money from Emily that like she needs to get this place so that to expand so Michelle can stay or to keep Michelle.
That's true. And I will say I did love that reasoning because it's like, yes, I could totally see her being like, oh, crap, I have to hold on to Michelle and that's how I'll do it. No, I think it made sense. I thought she was going to give the house to live in it. So it caught me a little bit by surprise. I think that it made sense because, you know, Richard left this money and it is a franchising. And the fact that he left the money for Lorelai's boyfriend and not for his daughter was like, I think it's okay with Emily's permission that Lorelai said, look, Luke has no interest in this, but I do. How about you let me do it? But I also think that the whole her coming to Emily for money again, I mean, obviously it was sort of very, very implied to be a full circle moment from the pilot. But all I could think during that scene was just like, wow, like we should all have like magically rich.
Oh my gosh, if only. Also, like it was... No,
could you imagine?
I was
like,
going to
say...
live
your life, you
no,
do the
I
best
actually
you
can't
can.
Imagine.
we should also point out, too, that like it is verbatim, like, that conversation from the pilot. It's just the difference is that Emily's the one that's saying Richard's lines.
Yeah. So, which is great, too.
Yeah, because he's really not cool. There and she just keeps going, you need money, I'll get the checkbook. And it's like... Anyway,
but it's a
great.
Different way, right?
It's
like it's a different,
almost the exact same.
Because, no, I mean
but
the
like
tone is different.
Oh, the tone is different. Yeah,
different.
Yeah, of course. I mean, she's so excited.
Because again, like it is kind of like I think that they're like when Lorelai comes to Emily for money, like I think they both realize now that it is like their dysfunctional way of connecting with each other. So like when Emily comes with all those claims, it's like, oh, they're going to keep having a relationship. Like, this is so cute. But I mean, again, you know, you're just watching that going, yes, like you just have this family member that just shoots money and out at you. And like whenever you want to do something, you can. I think that's like. I would like to have that.
If
like,
only.
I think that's great.
I honestly know.
I'm glad that she's
able
to do
this. The Gilmores live a charmed life.
I had it too.
For all their talk.
Well, Emily and Richard lived a charmed life, you know, and
yeah,
Lorelai,
but the
and
fact
Rory
that Lorelai can go and
that.
Do this, yeah. you yeah. know, is yeah. a charmed life.
Or that,
like, that is amazing.
Rory can live it's the way that she does, clearly. Mm-hmm. I mean, jetting
yeah,
from
I mean,
here, there,
no
and everywhere.
Comment. We'll yeah. get to that. You know, it's funny. I think it's because we were just talking about Bon Voyage, and I haven't written this down because I hadn't really thought about it. But in a way, I do like this conversation, but I almost like it less than the conversation. The very similar conversation that Lorelai and Emily have in Bon Voyage, where Emily's mm-hmm. trying to get Lorelai to expand because she wants to lend her money because that's
yes.
the way she
yeah,
is
yeah.
trying to connect, you know? Mm-hmm. And then Lorelai has that moment where she's like, why don't we talk about it Friday night at dinner? And Emily's like, oh, are you still going to come then, even though Rory isn't here? And Lorelai's like, well, like, we've done it for this long, you know, I'm kind of used to it now. And so I don't know that... Because that felt like
it felt like
that felt like progress
they'd move beyond that, yeah.
yeah.
yeah exactly.
Versus this felt like regression, and it's a regression in the name of coming full circle. So I get it, but I don't know. I didn't dislike it, but it just felt. I don't know. It just felt a little less than that moment. Now that I'm thinking about it, the moment that I did like between Emily and Lorelai when they're talking about the house is this very sweet moment when Lorelai is like, "What? You're selling the house? Why?" And Emily is like, why did you want it? But like
yeah.
asking in this very eager kind of, I'll give it to you way. And you know, and so in moments like that, and in moments like when she, like you said, Pam, when she's having that same conversation, but it's in such a different tone. It's not this disapproving, like, you need money, that's why you're here. It's like a bit, you know, Emily is a little sassy, like she can be, and she kind of is like that in that conversation where she's like, you need money, like, yes, I know, get to the point, but she's kind of laughing about it. I guess we see that they've moved on in that, but I don't know, it was different. All right, so the first outrage for Emily is that she does not appear until 36 minutes into the episode, which is when Lorelai phones her, so that is an outrage. There was definitely too little Emily in this episode, and... You know, the scene we were just discussing is the one scene that we get with Emily and Lorelai together, although they have the phone call, obviously. But the one scene with them actually together is when Lorelai goes around to ask for the money. We don't get any scenes of Emily and Rory together in this. Mm-hmm. We get Emily leaving her a voicemail, but that's it. So Emily's plotline is really about her moving on, and so... We get her amazing meltdown kind of, you know, statement, dismissal of the entire DAR and, like, everything they stand for, and just how that whole society works. And then her selling the house and moving to Nantucket with Berta and her family and taking the job at the museum, which I love for some reason, although it's just so bizarre.
Yeah.
So, Selena, what do you think about this? They're kind of all... it's all about closure, right? Like, she's deciding that this life that she had before is not a life that she really wants to have with Richard, and she wants to kind of go somewhere else and do something different.
Yeah. I mean, my plans for this revival, my hope, my dreams what I initially thought was that Lorelai was going to, like, be pregnant again, and Emily was going to move closer to Stars Hollow, and they were going to all be, like, more family-like. But I, in a way, like, this makes... a lot more sense, because Emily and Richard were by themselves. I mean, they weren't, you know, like, as much as you might want that, you don't erase an entire life, you know. They can't just start over and start, like, I don't know, Emily can't, like, replace Richard with that. So I get the change. I think the Berta thing was, I mean, again, it was cute, it was strange. Like, again, that's when I ask, can't she just go to Stars Hollow? Like, but I like that she makes such a big change to get away from Richard and her old life. I like that she breaks with that completely. And I really like the job at the museum, even though, again, it was the most random thing in the world. But it made her happy. Like, it was something totally different, and it made her really happy. And I think that was a joy. Like, I loved her ending. Like, even though, again, with her sort of just from a pure story, I was like, oh, but she's so far away from Stars Hollow. But just for her, I loved it. I think she's probably the one that had the best ending out of all of them. And it made me really satisfied. And it made me really satisfied that it wasn't with that guy, Jack. Like you said in the doc. Like,
right, how good was that?
Time, that was so good. Because last time I was like, oh, great. So she's just going to like, not that, I mean, if that's what she wanted, that would be fine. But I was like, well, she's just going to be someone else's wife now. And
Pam and
she
I
wasn't.
Are so sneaky.
Well, it wasn't you guys who put it on the screen, but yeah. But yeah,
but
no,
we
I
were
did.
Very good at keeping a secret. Thank you. Mm-hmm. The scene where she's like ushering him off. She's like, oh, what a shame. Bye. Anyway,
yes.
See you later.
That was awesome. I loved it. I loved that.
I think she has the best arc in the show.
I think I would agree with that.
Yeah. Also, I really liked that she ended up kind of really straying away from the life that she'd always known, because when we've talked about Emily in the past, I think that I've mentioned that the saddest thing about her life is like, not that it wasn't fulfilling for her, but it was just that she was groomed to be the person that she was, and she was never really her own person. And it kind of gives you a glimpse or an idea of like maybe what she would have been if she hadn't been born into privilege, you know, because she was kind of, she was married, like she said before that she like went from her house to a house with Richard. So she was always this homekeeper. And so to see her realizing her own interests, like her actual own interests, was really, really satisfying. And I loved that. And it was like, it was the strangest but most perfect job for her, because she gets to be, you know, dramatic and salacious and, you know.
And that makes sense. Great. Yeah.
Yeah, when that totally makes that sense. And you know, I also liked, I think we might have talked in the first episode about the sort of use of language in this, and the fact that even though it was on Netflix, like, there was a lot more drinking for some reason, because I guess they're, like, mature or whatever, but there wasn't a lot of cursing. So I like that they reserved that moment for Emily to be able to kind of make the most of the Netflix lack of restrictions, you know, in that scene that she has at the DAR. Like, it definitely was the most impactful than if it had been, you know, Rory or Lorelai kind of having their breakdown. And, you know, it was really, I found it really sad when she said, like, this died when Richard did. That was really heartbreaking. But again, like, that was her Richard moment, right? Like, that's the moment when she realizes, you know, exactly like you have both said, she needs to find something for her, and this is her, this can be her chance to do that. And we see in the final scene with her, which, you know, again, now that you've said it, Selena, like, I just really wish that she had been in that wedding, weird, like, dream wedding sequence thing. But instead we get that kind of interspersed with her at the house in Nantucket, and like, looking after the people there. She's putting blankets over the kids, I think. And, you know, she sort of ends up sitting under the stars with her glass of wine, which, like, there are worse things to end up doing in life. But there is the moment where she sort of kisses Richard's portrait, the smaller portrait that we see, that has arrived, the correct size, I guess, for closure of that sort of thing. And we see, like, you know, it's not that she's forgotten Richard by any means, but it's kind of an acceptance that she can do something for her too. And it's really sweet. So I wish there was more of her, but, you know, like you said, I think definitely not an ending we could have predicted.
No,
I don't think anyone predicted this.
She was happy, which was what mattered, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, it's so much like Luke stuff. This is so down to Kelly Bishop in part as well. Like, the way that she played Emily across this revival, I thought, was just so perfect, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, as in, Emily's not perfect, but her portrayal of her was just so on point, and so the Emily that we knew, while also having all of this extra weight of all these things that have happened since. So, yeah, shout out for her. Okay, final Gilmore. What could we possibly have to say about Rory? I don't know, guys. Wasn't much happening with her. Time for listener feedback. Okay, so, Selena, do you want to talk about the, like, Life and Death Brigade musical, Wizard of Oz, goodbye? Like, before you do, I just have to say, when we first watched this, I was so distracted, because I was like, that's the Across the Universe cover. Like, why are they using the Across the Universe cover? And I just kept, I was with our friend Mike, and I kept just being like, why are they, and he was like, I cannot answer this for you.
You know what?
Like, but it was from a different musical. Why are they using this song?
It was so late when I got to this that I, like, you know, I think we've talked about this before on the show. Merrima and I recorded our initial reactions to all the episodes, and it was like 4 o'clock in the morning when I got to this point. I was like, I think that they used the Jim Sturgis version, but I'm not sure, but why? So I was with you there. It was because you were trying to place it, and you were like, "This is not the Beatles. What is going on?"
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, so we get, so this is very early in the episode. We get this super extended musical sequence to across the to with a little help from my friends from across the universe, and then Logan is there, and Finn and the other Colin and what's the other one's name? They are all there, and then whatever, they go to the club. It's very boring. Logan and Rory make out. I don't know. It's hashtag romantic or something. And then there's like that Wizard of Oz scene at the end. Selena, do you have any thoughts on all of this?
I mean, I'd rather not. But yeah, I mean, first of all, you guys said about the music. So true. It was extremely distracting. And boring is probably the best word for it. Like, this is kind of, you know how we were talking about the musical last episode? We come into this finale and like slow motion running, dancing, like dream sequence. I hated it. And I don't think, I hate whenever, and the show is guilty of doing that a couple of times, thinking that something is more epic than it really is. And everything with Rory and Logan, I feel like, has been built up into this, that it just doesn't, it just can't hold it, you know? Like, it can't warrant a moment like that. Like, okay, nothing could warrant a moment like this, but especially not these two, because it's so, like, not only is it cheesy and too long and doesn't fit into the, like, I know they kind of return to it for the wedding too. Like, it is supposed to be a little bit dreamlike and psychedelic, but for this beginning especially, like, it doesn't make any sense for the relationship they have and where their story is right now, and everything, like how they have this, oh, last night, and oh, I have to let you go, and blah blah blah. Yeah, but you're both like cheating on your significant others with each other. He's getting married. You have, like, this is not a cute thing. This is not a good thing. This is not like a celebratory, oh, I hope they stay together, it's so romantic. Like, no. And I really hate it. I really, really, really hate that sequence. I think it was really hard to sit through, and it made me really angry. And I'm just glad that the rest of the episode was actually good, because it just brought the mood way down from the beginning for me. And it was worse than the musical last episode, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was Logan, so it was objectively worse in the context of the revival. You're so right, because it is so coded as this, like, romantic kind of heightened thing between them. And I hate the line that I noted was when Rory says, your days of rescuing me are over.
I had that,
like,
noted down too.
Oh,
yes.
You never needed rescuing. But, like, they're setting it up. They have set up the whole revival. It's coded like he is kind of rescuing her or saving her from something. And I was like, what show have you been watching? When in Gilmore Girls did Rory Gilmore need rescuing from Logan? Like, he ruined her life. You know, they get into, obviously, the relationship, like, progress or whatever. Logan came in to Rory's life and made things a bit more complicated in certain respects. You know, his family dynamic made her address some things about herself, etc. But it was certainly not a rescue, like, damsel in distress dynamic. I mean, I didn't read
it as
such. Well,
it's not even just that. It's just that he's never really helped her at all. Like, you know,
he's made things worse. He has, for the most part.
And you know what? The thing he's, like, most guilty of is building her up too much, like, especially with the, I hate to go back to this, but with the whole Sandy Says thing, like, the fact that he doesn't, like, take the opportunity for her to go in an interview for that job seriously and just says, like, oh yeah, like, this is trashy, but, like, if they take you, then you'll class the place up, instead of just being like, yeah, like, this is a good opportunity because, like, you know, .coms are, like, really in right now, online is, like, the way to go for journalism, which he should know because he had a failed, like, startup. He just kind of, like,
well,
you know,
I feel like, yeah, no, that's actually 100% accurate. But I think when, like, when she says rescuing, like, the specific thing she's referring to, which is, I hate that, is financially, you know, because when she was in college, and I don't remember what season that happened in, But and you know, she didn't want to live with Paris. She just moved in with Logan and stayed there. And that was her, like, she had this really nice apartment just because Logan let her stay there. And they had some conversations about rent and stuff. And then now here again, he's like, use my house, do the thing. Like, for all we knew, he paid for her to fly to London. You know, like, it feels like there's a real serious, like, Emily Richard financial taking, quote unquote, taking care of her situation.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And I really, really dislike that because it undermines Rory as a character, and it undermines her professional story, and it undermines her relationship with her mother. And I think it just kind of those, like, that line, particularly the line, I had it noted down as something I wanted to include in my, like, reactions post on Hypeable, Rory kind of put into words exactly why I'm not a fan of this Logan-Rory dynamic, because, and kind of going off what Pam said, Logan kind of invites her to live in this dream world with him, like, kind of, you know, very symbolically, even though I still hate it and I don't excuse it at all for that reason, but it is kind of like he takes her out of reality and says, no, you are in, like, this is the Huntsberger life, you know, she buys into the Huntsberger life, like when they were at that cabin by the sea, you know, and they were acting like the Huntsbergers that had Lorelai and Luke for dinner and stuff, and I hate everything, and I hate that, and it feels like in another story that would be the negative, like that would be coded as negative, but here it's coded as a positive thing, and I don't know how to feel about that.
No, that's the key point. That's exactly what I was going to say. The dream like thing is incredibly insightful, but exactly like you said, it's coded like it's a positive thing for her, and it's meant to be this kind of bittersweet, like very romantic, sad goodbye between them, instead of you thinking like good riddance. You know, why is this? And also the other thing, like, they're 32 years old. This isn't cute. Like, it's not cute for her to be acting this way or for him to be acting this way. It's not cute that her friends are like, oh, I just bought a club. I just bought a B&B. I just bought a car. Like, haha, I have money.
None
like,
of that
it's
was
so great.
Living. No.
But it's meant to. And you're totally right that it's coded in this like weirdly positive way. And I'm genuinely so perplexed as to like what Amy Sherman-Palladino thinks about Logan based on the Logan-centric nature of this revival. Because now that we've seen it all, while we were watching it, Selena, I know you kept being like, I did not expect Logan to be in it this much. And certainly that's the feeling that I had while I was watching it. I was like, I did not sign up for 4 episodes of Logan. Like, I'm not even saying it should have been all Jess, but like it was so much about Logan rather than
right.
even being
and
about
the weird
Rory.
Thing, and the weird thing too is that whenever Jess and Dean, I mean, whenever he was there for 5
we'll
seconds, like they were really like clearly like great. Like it wasn't like they tore down Jess or Dean to build up Logan. Like they were both clearly like, I don't know. It was very, very strange because it doesn't really tell you what to think, I guess, which I kind of like, but it does because it just by sheer volume of who was there the most, it does lead, you know, way towards Logan. But it was really interesting because by the end of it, I was like, what am I supposed to feel? Because they had that lingering thing on Jess that I'm sure we'll get into, but I was like, I'm supposed to like sympathize with Jess in this moment. I don't know what's like, it's very frustrating.
Yeah, it's weird because like you said, she's not telling you, she's not coming down in a particular way. It doesn't seem like for one of the three. So maybe that was her way of like kind of doing fan service, leaving it open to people at the same time by like sheer screen time.
Mm-hmm.
It's so about Logan in a way that it obviously didn't have to be because this is 9 years later. Like there is no reason for it to be Logan. It actually makes less sense for it to be Logan because we've already seen how their relationship plays out. And now we're seeing, and in the show we saw a generally positive relationship. Like we saw a relationship that kind of, it had its up and downs and then it kind of reached the end and, you know, people who are Logan fans may not like the way that the proposal went down. I totally get that. But I mean, we basically saw the relationship run its course. And in this, we see this super weird negative version of that that's kind of coded as a good thing. And it's coded as this like romantic thing between the two of them, but they can't be together because, like, the Huntsberger dynasty says he has to marry this other girl, and oh, it's so sad, and they have to find their own way and whatever. But it's like, no, but I mean, he's a grown up, you know, they're both grown ups, like, they're making decisions. He doesn't have to do this.
It's not a blood pact, like,
exactly.
You know what's so funny about that moment, though, is that, like, I could, when I was watching it, I could feel myself, like, feeling sad for these two characters, and then I was angry. Then I was angry because I realized that, like, my emotions had been manipulated to make me feel this way, and I was like, what are you doing? No, this is not sad, because they should have ended this, like, ages ago. But I was like, it is really troublesome. It really was troublesome to me at the moment, because it was so easy to forget. And I would be interested to hear, like, from our listeners if anybody felt the same way, because for that 1 second I did kind of forget why they couldn't be together, and then I remembered, like, very quickly. I was like, no, this is wrong, like, you shouldn't be feeling sad.
Yeah,
you know.
And speaking of, we kind of find out just towards the end, but just to wrap up this conversation, that in fact Rory was still with Paul this entire time, and then he breaks up with her, and it's, like, hilarious because he's the one who does it or something.
You know what? She doesn't deserve Paul.
In summary, Rory is a terrible person.
She does not. Rory doesn't deserve Paul.
Justice for Paul.
Poor Paul.
Yeah, I know. He was probably a really, you know what? He might be, like, not as exciting.
He was such a nice guy.
Yeah, he was a nice guy.
Look at his scenes. He remembered everybody. He brought, like,
so basically,
that tool thing.
The moral of the story is that nice guys really do finish last. Thanks, Amy. That's so sad.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway, so I mean, that's kind of it for the romance. We'll talk about the Jess thing, like you mentioned, Selena, but I think we need to talk about that more in Jess's side than Rory's, because that kind of doesn't really have anything to do with her in a way. So that all of happens. Then there are two other storylines with Rory, basically. We have the book, first of all. So let's talk about that. This weird, annoying meta book of, like, cut
guys,
the and
I
have
was
Gilmore
right.
Girls. I mean, was it... I don't think it was a particularly, like, subtle foreshadowing.
I know. I'm not happy about being... I was hoping they would, like, be more subtle than that. But
yeah,
no.
At least it didn't. Did you think, so when I was watching this, I definitely thought it was going to end with, like, because they spent so much time doing this stupid book thing, I thought it was going to be this stupid meta ending of, like, and that was the end, like, and then Rory, like, closes the final page, and that's, you know, she's written the book, is, like, what we've been watching this whole time.
Yeah, I was glad that didn't happen.
I almost would have preferred it.
Really?
But, yeah, okay.
Well, it's kind of like a fire or flames, I guess. But yeah,
that's true. So the book, first of all, the writing of the book, and just going off from where we end up with Logan, Rory decides to go and write in Richard's office. So we finally see a sort of moment of grief from Rory, which I think we would agree we haven't seen any evidence of up to this point. And that was really beautiful, I thought, that moment.
It was very beautiful. That was one of my favorite parts of the revival, was Richard, funnily enough.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means. But yeah, I mean, him every time, and her walking through the empty house, it really felt like a goodbye. And having him, I thought it was so well done.
Yeah, it felt like a beautiful tribute to Edward Herman, almost more so than the other Richard moments, because I guess he wasn't on screen, which seemed more about the other characters, versus this seemed very much about sort of honoring him. And kind of watching these flashbacks, I was sort of sad we didn't get more moments like this. I don't know. I mean, I don't really know how that would have worked, but I was just like, oh, this is the show that I love. And it was, you know, that was really beautiful. And it was nice to get that moment from Rory and Richard, but at the same time, it felt lessened to me by the fact that we've hardly seen her even mention him, and certainly not grieve in any noticeable way across like this 6 hours of television. So
yeah, it would have been more appropriate for it, like, based on the revival alone, it would have been more appropriate for it to be Lorelai's scenes,
right?
But just because there hasn't been anything for Rory, yeah for sure, but just because there hadn't been anything for Rory yet, I'm glad they included it for her, because otherwise it would have felt really weird. But
totally. But I wonder why they didn't put in an actual grief storyline for her, because
I wonder
it's implied that, much like Lorelai not being able to choose a chef, you know, that happens before Richard dies. It's implied that Rory has been kind of floating and unsure of what she's doing, but up, like, prior to the death, because even at like his funeral, she has to fly off somewhere. So I don't know. It's just questions that we'll ask Amy when she comes on the podcast one day. Lol, as if she ever would after listening to all of our
well, maybe she needs to come and defend herself. We're yeah, really nice if we promise. True. If she wants to come on.
We just have a lot of questions.
We do have a lot of questions.
Yeah. So she writes the book in Richard's office, and basically the resolution that we see between Rory and Lorelai from the last episode, they're not speaking. They have a big fight about it. Rory says to Lorelai, "I've written the first three chapters. You read them." Lorelai says, "I'm not going to read them. You write the book." And that's basically it. So I mean, cool, I guess. Like this whole plot line just seems kind of odd to me, because like, who's going to read this book? And no one cares about what some millennial person's relationship with their mother, but like, whatever, that's fine. I like what you said at the start from Lorelai's perspective though, Selena, about this kind of being a moment of generosity of her to be allow Rory to be open about her life and kind of giving this to Rory. Like, she didn't need to do this, but she chose to do this. Yeah. Even though Rory says she's gonna change the names of the guilty, as it were.
I think so. I really do. I think that there's a big thing in this revival about Rory or Lorelai holding on to, and in the show in general, Lorelai holding on to her past, you know, and really guarding her past and also holding on to the pain. And I think this episode sort of shows her both letting go of that tight grip she has on her story, as it were, and her pain and her strength and all of her experiences, allowing her and the other characters in her life, like, in a way, her letting go of that allows both Rory and Emily to move forward. And I think that's very important.
Yeah, that's very insightful. I like that interpretation. Pam, did you have any other thoughts on the book kind of situation?
I think it's fine. I mean, I'm so indifferent on the idea of that plot, just because I feel like it's very overused in television.
It is very overused, so, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's fine. It doesn't bother me. I think that they found a nice way to, like, resolve it, but it's not, like, I think I just don't feel too much for it because it's not a groundbreaking idea. So,
no, this is
true. But if
it
helps Rory get back on track, like, that's fine. You know, she'll probably, like Selena has said before, she'll write like half of it and then realize her true calling and like actually go pursue like something else.
Yeah, that's true. It gives her something to do in the meantime anyway. Okay, let's talk about Dean real quick, because Dean was great. Would we all agree that Dean, like, was, for the first time in the entire show, Dean was, like, really good?
Stop. He was good in the first season.
Trench coat.
Yeah,
like,
he was the best first boyfriend. Like, and she even says that, too. She says, "You made me feel safe." Like, that's a really big thing when you're a teenager. Like, as far, she could have had a terrible first boyfriend.
Did anyone else feel like when she was saying all that stuff to him, Dean growing, like, it, like, more and more uncomfortable, being like, "Are you proposing to me or something?" Like, what? Like, it was just, it was a lot. And he was like, "Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. That's, anyway, I gotta go, bye." Like, back to my wife and children.
Yeah. Like, I'm not holding on to the past. I'm gone. I'm over this now. Yeah. But
I'm living my best life.
It was so funny though, because literally, like, I was, and you will see this in my notes if you read that post on Hypable, but I just finished typing out the sentence, like, "Okay, there's 25 minutes left. Where the hell is Dean?" And then he arrived. I thought that was
in
so
doses.
Funny.
So yeah, appropriate. And then he was there.
But I think it was such a good scene. Like, I wish he had been in there more, and especially seeing him in this scene. I was glad that he was sort of settled and happy, and I, you know, I'm glad that Rory got a chance to tell him all that, because I think, I mean, I never really liked Dean, but I think Pam is right also in the sense that the boyfriends that have come after have definitely not, like, just Rory's feelings for Dean, like, however we feel about Dean, Rory's feelings for Dean were legit, and there was any question.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas I feel like with both Jess and Logan, there were so many other factors that sort of contributed to the quote-unquote like unsafe feeling that she may have had in those relationships, like where is this going, what do they feel about me, blah blah blah. Like she was never in any doubt of Dean's feelings for her, and you know, he built her a car. It's kind of, and when you look back, when you're older and you look back, those are the kinds of things that you remember. And I think that was, it was a very nice moment to bring it home. And I was just like, well, maybe they should have just brought Dean back instead of Logan. Like, maybe I would have actually liked that more.
Oh, no. No, because they already had their second go around, so it wouldn't have made sense.
But you're right, you're right. That would have ruined it. It needed to be this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I just like Jared Padalecki so much.
I know. Also,
it was a great, like, it was a great scene of, you know, running into your first, like, your first boyfriend or your first girlfriend or whoever and being like, yeah, I may have made a mistake and not keeping with this person when you see them grown up. Oh. Like, Dean has his life together. Dean is very, like, all, I mean, personality aside, characterization aside, we can agree that all of the Gilmore boys, like Rory's boys, have aged very well. And Jared Padalecki looks great. So just in an objective sense, like you would see him and be like, should I have stayed with this guy? Like, I can totally understand Rory being like, you made me safe and you made me like all this stuff anyway. So should we, I mean, you know, mate. And Dean's like, okay, bye. Like, see you later. But that felt like a real interaction. I don't know. It was such a small scene, but I think it was really well done.
You know what? This is like the only scene that was kind of spoiled for me for the whole revival. Because,
oh, really?
Well, I wrote up a post for People's Choice, and Jared Padalecki mentioned at a Supernatural convention, I was like writing about what happened there, that he was going to come back for one scene at Dosey's Market. So every time we were in Dosey's Market, I was just waiting for Dean.
You're on high alert.
Yeah, because he said that, and he said it was very fitting. So after that, I realized that, like, well, first of all, Dean would not be a contender for, like, you know, somebody for Rory to end up with if she were to end up with anybody. But also I was like waiting for him to show up and show up and show up. So by the time we got to fall, I was kind of like Selena, where I was like, wait, where's Dean? Dean was supposed to be at Dosey's, and all of a sudden he was just there. And it was,
yeah,
it was very satisfying.
Nice. I was spoiled that, I mean, I knew that Dean was in one episode and Jess was in two, and I don't think I knew how many Logan was in. So I was like, as I was watching them all, I was like cataloging, well, they weren't in this one, maybe they'll be. So by the time we got halfway through, I was like, Jess is in the next two. Jess is the end game. And then, you know, before we watched Fall, I was like, okay, so there's obviously going to be like just a Dean cameo in this. But yeah, that's funny that that was what was spoiled for you. I mean, as far as things go, I guess that's not too bad.
No, it's not at all.
Yeah. Okay, so, I mean, I think we have to talk about it, guys. We have put it off for long enough, but the final four words. And leading into this, Rory's conversation with Christopher, who finally appears. Selena, I think last episode I was kind of teasing, like, or asking you in a very... now like obnoxious way about who you thought was coming back, and I think you said you weren't sure that Christopher would come back. So watching this scene, I knew from this point, this isn't like a, oh, I'm so smart, like whatever thing, I don't think it was particularly subtle, I knew from this point that Rory was definitely pregnant from this scene, because it's like so awkward and so, like, you know, it's obviously framed in her finding things out for the book, but it's so much about like, so is being a single parent a good decision, basically? What did you guys think about the scene? Did it give it away for you, or were you surprised by the final four words? Did you like seeing Christopher again? I mean, he has also aged well.
Oh, he has, for sure. I mean, I will say I was spoiled by the pregnancy. Like, I kind of indicated that, like, that was one of the main things that I was spoiled about.
That was a shame.
I didn't know the final four words, but I did know that she was going to end up being pregnant. So, but you know what? Even that, I will say that I never would have guessed it from the scene, because I was so busy focusing on, first of all, I assumed it was just for the book. And I was just so busy, like, being mad at Christopher. As right. always, that my mind wasn't thinking too far.
Yeah,
ahead.
Actually, that makes sense.
I feel like, I mean, we've had this conversation with Christopher like a million times, but I feel like the whole thing of him having a child and leaving the state, you know, I know Lorelai, I get what he's saying in a way, but it doesn't, he actively made the choice to leave his daughter behind and to pursue a life elsewhere. And you cannot, there is no, like, I know, like, that's a choice people make sometimes, and that's okay, but there is no sort of washing that away by saying, oh, it was meant to be, or
oh yeah, the explanation is the worst. Like, yeah. This is a terrible explanation for,
yes,
you know, but we're meant to buy into it, right?
It's so funny.
The show wants us to buy into it. Well,
I don't know if it does. Like, I feel like it is, that's one of the things, it is a very realistic situation, and I feel like it's one of those things they're just kind of presenting for us to be like, oh yeah, that's the thing that happens. Also because he's talking about Gigi, who is currently living in another country, and like, he, I'm sure,
yeah,
you know,
father of
he, Leo. With all his, yeah, with all his money and all of his, like, whatever, he doesn't know what to use it for. Like, how about, like, going, you know, working abroad or moving your business there, or at least going there part-time, which I guess he could be. We don't actually know. But it just, it feels like history is repeating itself with Christopher in a big way there. Like, Sherry left him alone with Gigi, and the minute she came back into his life, Christopher was very eager to get Gigi on a plane to Sherry. And I thought that was like, at the time, you know, and just the confirmation that she's now living with her mother in Paris. It's like, yeah, of course she is. It's very,
yeah,
sad.
I think we are meant to be on, I think we are meant to buy into this because of the bit where he says it's exactly what was supposed to happen. And I think your mom would agree. And Rory says, yeah, I think she would too. And it's clear that she also kind of agrees with that. And that's meant to absolve him of things. Like, you know, people who listen to this know that I'm not anti-Christopher by any means. But the show definitely at times is much more forgiving to him than he deserves based on the actions that we have seen. And this seemed like another example of that. I wondered if it was maybe because of the season 7, like, marriage plotline. Of Amy being like, well, actually, like, he's a good guy and they loved each other. And I don't know. I mean, this whole conversation just felt so awkward to me. It did not feel, yeah, like, Rory and Christopher obviously have had their problems, but for the most part, they had managed to have a relationship outside of what was going on with him and Lorelai. And this just felt like a conversation between people who haven't seen each other in 9 years. Like, it was so awkward.
I don't know. Christopher just really bothers me, but I think that it just bothers me because, like, my parents are also divorced and, like, my dad was there, mm-hmm. but, like, it's never a good situation when, like, you spend more time with one parent than you do with others. And it's believable to me that Christopher and Rory would have, like, fallen out of touch, basically, in the process of life, mm-hmm. and, like, growing up and stuff like that. So that didn't really bother me, like, in terms of, like, the awkwardness, but it just bothered me on an emotional level because it's just so sad. And
yeah, it's very, it hits home.
It does
lot, hit, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. And like, that's kind of how I've always felt about Christopher is like, he's a good pal, but he's probably not the best dad. But sometimes that happens. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
True to character,
yeah,
I guess.
That makes sense. Yes. Okay. You want to talk about Rory being pregnant?
I guess.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we have to, so.
We do have to. I will say, it's so funny because, again, we keep coming back to what if this had happened, like, 9 years ago, like it was supposed,
yeah,
to. And I think one of my biggest problems, again, with this revival is that it just doesn't, like, pretending like Rory is in the same situation as Lorelai in any way to kind of complete this full circle vibe they're going for is really difficult because she's not. And, like, she has had a lot more time to grow, and even though her career is definitely not settled, it, you know, she's a lot more stable and she doesn't have, like, I think the idea of it is really good. I like the cycle starting over of, okay, well, now she's going to be a single mom and how is that going to work? And I like, you know, it's obviously going to be different because she and Lorelai don't have the relationship that Lorelai has with her parents. But at the same time, the effect is kind of ruined because Rory's situation is so different and she isn't going to be alone with this baby. Like, she's going to have Lorelai, she's going to have Luke, she's going to have everyone in Stars Hollow. She's gonna have, well, I guess Lorelai had that too, but but I mean, I just feel like the thought of Rory being pregnant, the weird ambiguity about who the dad is was strange.
Well, who do you think the dad
obviously,
is?
It's obviously Logan.
Right.
Like, it doesn't make sense for it to be anyone else, but they don't explicitly state it, which kind of leaves some room for, like, I know there was, like, this article that is also part of the reason why I was spoiled about this reveal, going, like, could Jess be the dad? And, like, examining moments when, like, they're missing moments. But I'm like, no. So.
So you don't,
like,
think it's the Wookiee?
Well, I was gonna say the main theory is it the Wookiee? Is it Paul in some unseen moment, or is it Logan? But
of those, it's obviously gonna be Logan.
The Wookiee thing happened too long ago, anyway. I think it to be because she's not showing or anything. So, like, she it's obviously, like, relatively early in her pregnancy.
And with that whole, like, romantic weekend and final night and whatever, like, it's obviously Logan. And I feel like, I think it's Natalia, one of our listeners, who says, sorry if I got that wrong, but who says that, like, Logan is obviously, like, Rory's Christopher. And yes, he is. And this kind of hammers that home, but it just feels a little bit, and it feels so unfinished. Like, it doesn't feel like a full circle moment. Like, oh, great, we're back to where we started, the end. It feels like, okay, so now the story can begin. Like, if the revival had opened with her being pregnant, that would have made a lot more sense.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it like that. Pam, I mean, we talked about this a bit on that first reaction show, which actually would be really interesting to go back and listen to now, because I can't even remember what we now. Yeah, I can't remember what we talked about. I remember, you know, rage. But Pam, what do you think about this now with some time between, you know, some time to ponder, as it were?
I don't think I'm still not satisfied with it, because I just, you know, it's still hard for me to decide how I feel about this. I guess it's just that it wasn't what I was expecting for Rory's future, but maybe it is more realistic in the grand scheme of life to think that Rory's life didn't turn out as perfectly as everybody always thought it would. So a baby does throw a wrench into the situation. Yeah.
There's, like, nothing of her else of her life is certain. That's also why it feels really like weird. Because, she's pregnant. That's great. Full circle. But what now? There's no closure. There's no sense of completion. Mm-hmm.
That's the whole thing.
All of the questions that still linger around it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, and I guess, like, you're just meant to believe that she, because she always wanted to be like Lorelai, she raises her daughter to march to the beat of her own drum and, you know, gives her all the opportunities, and then another tiny Rory is, you know, brought into the world. Or maybe it's a boy. Maybe she, like, ends the Gilmore Girls cycle, and it's, you know, I don't know.
But we don't know.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, it's an unfinished circle. As much as they wanted this to be, like, the come full circle moment, it just raises so many more questions about what happens now, and I don't know. I don't know. It's still...
Here's my theory. She's going to have twins, a boy and a girl. Mm-hmm. One of them's going to be Logan's and the other one's going to be Jess.
Oh my God, how did that ask me how?
Because it's now a sci-fi show.
Yes.
Okay, I really hate this. I still really hate this. And surprising possibly no one, I think the article I wrote after this was like how this broke my heart, basically, this scene. And the reason that it does is because it was meant to happen to Rory at 23. And so I know that it's now 32 and that's fine. But the thing is, it was meant to happen at 23, which makes me think very differently about this show. And I have tried really hard in the revival, and, you know, I may or may not have been successful. That's definitely up to you guys listening to determine, to sort of separate that feeling from just watching the show and, like, enjoying it in the moment. And after some time, I'm actually finding it a little easier to just basically pretend that this didn't happen, because otherwise this means that, you know, Amy Sherman-Palladino has said, like, well, I always knew the show was going to end this way with these four words. So, like, the show is always going to end with Rory being pregnant. Whether or not she was going to be, like, single mother, it was going to be this full circle thing, we don't know any of that. But the implication in Gilmore Girls when someone's pregnant is that that's kind of an end of their life, and it might be the start of a new kind of life, like it was for Lorelai, but we certainly saw with Lane that that was kind of it for Lane, you know, for like Gigi.
But that wasn't
kind of,
Amy Sherman-Belanger's
fault, of course not. But yeah, like she didn't do anything to change that in the revival. So so Rory being pregnant at 23 makes me be like, so what was all that work for? Because first of all, the word abortion is never mentioned in Gilmore Girls. So like it's implied that she's going to be a mother. Like that's a separate conversation. But if we assume that, yes, she's going to have the baby, then what, she's coming back to Stars Hollow, like this whole revival was about breaking down all of these things that we thought about Rory. Like she's not successful in her job. She can't have a relationship. Like she has to move back home with her mother, basically. Like she's 32 years old and she has to move in with her mother. And we can have a separate conversation about like whether that's realistic or not. Sure it is, but it's not, it's also not the show that Gilmore Girls has been until this moment. Like the emotions and the emotional relationships on Gilmore Girls have always been very realistic, but like the actual events of like what goes down has always been a bit, you know, nice. Like things work out for characters, basically. So what was all the hard work for, of like Rory going to Chilton and Rory going to Yale and like Rory doing these internships and Rory like being meant to have more than her mother if she was then meant to be pregnant at 23? And like, you can say, well, this isn't a thing saying like your life is over at 23, but certainly she would not have been able to take that Obama job, for example. Like she wouldn't have been able to go off and be a journalist or whatever immediately if she had had a child. And so it just makes me really like, I really struggle with how I feel about the show, because watching the revival, I feel like the women, and this is why I got so kind of upset about the Paris stuff earlier on, and obviously just the total absence of any storyline for Lane, I feel like women on this show who try to do more or like go beyond their circumstances are punished. Like Paris is punished because she can have the job, but like not, and she can have the kids, but then she can't have a relationship and she's like plagued by imposter syndrome. And like Lane doesn't get anything, and like Rory, everything falls apart for her. And that might be like a broader commentary on kind of the millennial generation or whatever, which obviously like Amy has some fun with the 30 something gang and, you know, saying that this is part of a bigger problem. But like the reality is the characters we focus on are all women. And so it feels like a thing about women, you know, and I just, I don't know. It's really difficult. I don't know if any of this made sense, but it's very difficult for me to reconcile, like knowing that this was meant to be the ending. I don't particularly like it at 32, but if it happened just at 32, like, okay, fine. I mean, I would still have all the questions that you have, Selena, but knowing that this was how the original show was meant to end at 23, just, I just don't like it. I just don't like that.
Well, first of all, I think that that is really fair, and I think it made total sense, everything you said, and I think it's a very important thing. I think it, and you know, in a way, like Lane is very much at the center of this, because she is kind of, she was dropped, like her storyline was just dropped on the floor completely. And I feel like with Rory, for me, a lot of it is about framing. And I think you'll probably have some listeners that disagree with you just because of overall interpretation of the thing. But that doesn't mean that you're wrong. It just means that it's, I guess, about how you approach it. But with Rory, even if it had happened at 23, I think there are ways in which her being pregnant, like it's not an ending, but it is an ending because the show says it's an ending, and because it literally ends the show.
Right, because that's what I mean. It's not that pregnancy is an ending. It's the way that it's framed. Yeah, exactly.
And I think goes back to what I was saying about if the revival had opened with her being pregnant, that would have been very different. Because then we would have been seeing her go through all these professional struggles and romantic struggles. Oh, but she was also going to have a kid. But it was like almost an empowering thing, because, yeah, she's had like her life is going on. And yes, she's going to have like a child, and presumably she wants this child and she's going to be happy about it. on like Lane, for whom it literally, she said it, mm-hmm. it ended her life on screen, which was horrible. But you know, and then we would have seen like, oh, you know, Lorelai would have been more involved, or like Emily or whatever. But because of the way it's framed, and also that kind of goes back to how we, when the revival started, I thought that Lorelai was going to have that kid. And I thought that would be really good. I think we even talked about that when we were making our predictions before watching any of it, that,
mm-hmm. yeah,
you know, that would be really nice, because it kind of, you know, defies age tropes. Like an older woman can have a child, and there's, you know, that's a new chapter of her story, and a new, you know, it's something new. It's not something. And I think in a way, like the Gilmore Girls was sort of set up by when she had this kid at 16, it actually didn't end her life. It actually opened her life in a new way. Like Lorelai's, I think Lorelai would be the first to say, like, having a kid at that age is not ideal, but in her case, it allowed her to have this really great, great life, and this really great relationship with her daughter, and these really great opportunities, and that hardships kind of shaped her, and that's the foundation for the show, and I think that's really awesome. But it's almost like everything we've seen since then has kind of done a lot to undo that. It doesn't take away, the premise of the show is really awesome and I really like it, but it's true that this ending it with Rory's pregnancy and kind of taking it full circle does kind of say, well, you know, it does kind of lead back to, like you were saying, well, what's the point? And I feel like if we'd seen a little bit more of what her life would have been like with a baby, like if there's more to it, if there's going to be more Gilmore Girls, I feel like that can sort of undo a lot of the damage in a way of this finale. But for now, it is, you are right to say, well, yeah, why was her story set up to this way? Why was her character presented in this way, only to kind of fail in everything she did and then end up with this pregnancy that she's never, never made any indication that she was interested in or wanted?
Yeah, I agree with all of that. Pam, do you have any other thoughts on this before we talk about something maybe a little more positive?
Well, I think I just, like, at the end of the day, I want to believe that it's just because, like, for my sanity, I just want to believe that it's not necessarily an end for Rory. I mean, again, like, you make total sense with the whole idea that the framing of pregnancy in the show only leads us to believe that Rory has to give everything up to be a mother. But if you look at, like, her inspirations and stuff like that, a lot of these women that she looks up to, like Christian Amanpour, they're like working mothers and they're still able to have a family and mm-hmm. and do what they want.
To see it,
yeah, you know? And that's the whole thing. So
you're right.
Yeah. But... and it's just, so it's hard, like, because you can't say that Rory's the exception when all we've ever seen is people that either fail at their careers or fail at, you know, their personal lives. But these are like, right. And it's just like, they're all unanswered questions. And I think that we'll never really truly feel settled until Amy comes out and either gives us more so we know what happens, or just puts it all to rest and says, like, yeah, Rory just, like, stayed at Stars Hollow forever and she just raised her kid. Or she says Emily and Lorelai helped her out and she did all of the stuff she wanted to do. And then when the kid was a little bit older, she was able to do more, you know? So.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's one to ponder. But
those final four words though, sorry, just before we move on, I think I was like not necessarily disappointed by the context of it, but I thought it was like a really lame way, because they weren't final four. They were just, I don't know, it was just words. Like, mom, yeah, like the fact that it wasn't like a sentence, you know, and I know that was only like something we thought, that they never actually said it was a sentence, but that it was just like a back and forth, and that one of the final four words was, yeah. Like, it just feels, I feel a little bit cheated by that.
Yeah, I was definitely, when we got to, so when we were watching it, like, we couldn't see the, you know, whatever, the tracker thing to see, like, how much time was left. But I knew when we got to that gazebo scene that we must be at the end. And so every time they said any four words, mm-hmm. I was like, is this the final four? Like, I was so on edge waiting for them. And, yeah, and then that was, yeah, like you said, it's kind of, it didn't feel like the final four words. It was just like the last,
it was the final
words,
two words,
or like,
you know,
whatever. Like, you know, it was just yeah. Like, yeah, they didn't feel like capital letters, the final four words, as much as just the words that happen to be at the end of the show. So, you know what? I think people are going to have a lot of thoughts about this. And certainly I think a lot of this might be covered in some of our listener feedback. But before we get there, we're going to do some favorites. And just to finish up our conversation of fall, of course, we can't go any further than this without talking about Jess. I might even scroll up to look at his beautiful face again. Oh, yep, he's still sad. Ah, Jess, so sorry. So this is, you know, this is kind of the last piece of this full circle thing, right? Because the implication is obviously that Jess is still in love with Rory in some sense, and maybe that Jess is going to be sort of the Luke to Rory's Lorelai, you know, to really keep it in the family. So he gets some nice scenes in this with Luke, which we discussed that before, but what do we think about this idea that Jess is still kind of holding out and that Rory doesn't know, and that we never got any kind of resolution for them? Like, Dean and Rory and Logan and Rory both get a kind of end, like a goodbye. They get a resolution scene. And with Jess, it just feels like there is more story to tell, or that might just be projection.
No, it's true. You're right. It wasn't, again, like, what a way to sort of quote unquote end it for him. Like, what? That wasn't an end. That was just, oh, it makes me so mad. And it also, just in light of Jess's journey in the revival, like, he... Or no, not in the revival, in the show in general, like, he was that ultimate, like, he got his life together and he was so good and he was so right for Rory. And I don't even say that as a, like, in any kind of, like, oh, shipping, whatever, but, like, literally he had the life that Rory wanted to have with Jess. She could do those things that it felt like she'd wanted to do, like write books and work in a bookshop or... go on or work as a publisher or go on book tours or whatever the hell, like, all of that was kind of in, like, that's how, why they bonded originally, when they kind of gave Jess Dean's interest in books, but whatever, we don't talk about that, but, you know, that was them together, and Logan is pulling her into this more Emily lifestyle while Jess feels like he's pulling her in the direction that she would naturally go in if she wasn't always being sort of framed by her relationships. And so and there was that moment in the original show when she comes to see him and they almost kiss or something happens. And she's like, no, I love Logan. And I was like, are we watching the same show? Like, that's not how the story goes.
Yeah, like, that's the cause of your season 6 hatred. I think that's, yeah.
it has a lot to do with it, for sure. Because I was like, there's no proof of this in the text. Like, literally everything we're seeing to this moment is leading Rory to make a different decision than she does. Or, you know, so, and I feel like the revival kind of just was like, add insult to injury, because then we have Jess coming back still being awesome, like literally repeating their conversation from the original show about how she should write a book and how she could totally do this, whatever. And then, you know, we find out he's still in love with her. Again, it feels like a beginning. It feels like that's a story that should have happened in the first part of the revival, and then we would see how that played out. It didn't feel like a cheap gimmick or like throwing the shippers a bone or whatever. It feels like the real story is here. Not in all the stupid across the universe, like, dance party thing.
Yeah.
That felt like filler.
I wonder how long it would take them to get together. Like, it's because it took Lorelai so long to realize that she was meant to be with Luke all along.
And it just, right, but they've already been together. Like, that's the difference.
Yeah, know? But that yeah, doesn't but necessarily.
Also obviously an idiot.
Yeah.
Like, how much time has she wasted on Logan? She has true. Very poor decision making skills.
I also can't believe that she doesn't realize that, like, Jess makes her a better person. Like, all exactly. everything, yeah, that's the like thing. Good. Like,
does the show realize it? Like, I'm not even sure.
I have to hope so, like... because they kept bringing him back. I mean, there's no reason why he should be the reason that, like, she goes back to Yale, or like, he should be the reason that she realizes in season 6 that she needs to be a better person, or that she needs to write a book.
Every time, like, they need,
he is the Rory voice to get of her reason.
Life together, Jess is who comes mm-hmm. back. Yeah, yeah. I wonder if they don't, you know, I like, again, because I didn't know how much time was left in the episode and I knew this one was a little longer. When I saw this scene, I was like, oh my God, it's going to happen. And then just, it didn't happen. And I was like,
no.
we're getting less and less time. And I just had this sinking feeling as we were watching the rest of it. And I was like, oh my God, it's not gonna happen. Like, it's just not.
And I would like, just say, like, I do enjoy, like, and I know a lot of people have said this, like, we were so busy trying to work out who she's going to end up with. I do enjoy that she doesn't end up with any of them. Like, I like the concept of that.
Oh,
my
sure.
problem is kind of, but like, goes back to the conversation. Yeah, it kind of goes back to the conversation we just had. And it also goes back to how it's so implied, like, the Logan thing, that it's not really finished. So it's kind of like, if nothing else, like, it's going to be Logan's baby and there's going to be something with that. And there's no resolution. Like, it doesn't feel like... She doesn't end up with anyone because she doesn't end up. Like, she doesn't end.
Right.
You know, and right. it just feels so weird and inconclusive. And, like, they threw all those things at us last minute. And then they just, they were like, goodbye.
It's weird,
like,
though.
You have the last chapter of their book and that's where all your story
it's
is.
It's weird so because weird. I think it was meant to comfort, like, the idea that these characters still live on, but it didn't.
No.
But yeah, that's the whole that's thing. I think point. That, like, because, like, when you think about, like the Deathly Hallows epilogue, the idea that Harry and Ron and Hermione just, like, live their normal lives, we just forget about Cursed Child, and they're happy in their mundane and ordinary existences with their children, like, it does leave you kind of just at ease knowing that they're okay, but throwing a huge wrench into the mix with this pregnancy, like, you can't feel closure or even comfort in the idea that these characters still exist. Like, you got more of that in season 7 when Rory was going off to cover the Obama campaign because you knew all the characters yeah, were
that felt like an
yeah,
ending.
Yeah, well, just okay. yeah, an open-ended ending, because, like, you could imagine that Rory could go on from there and Stars Hollow would still stay the same, and I don't know. It was
yeah, and Luke and Lorelai were gonna
get,
you know,
married.
They had reunited, mm-hmm. and like they were gonna. Yeah, I think that maybe the thing about this is like because Lorelai and Emily have such a resolution, it's so noticeable that like nothing in Rory's life is certain or like is kind of going well. I mean, like you said, Selena, the pregnancy thing is an issue because she's never expressed any desire to have a child and. Assumedly she's having a child with this guy who's in a relationship, like who's about to get married to someone else. So, you know, it's not this joyful thing. And like, sure, she's going to do the book, but like, okay, cool. Like she doesn't have a job. She doesn't have a house. Like she has no money. It feels like a regression because she's kind of lost all these things that she had. And I think that's why the Jess thing feels so like, oh, another thing that, you know, she can't, it's not about her ending up with someone or whatever, but it just feels like yet another open-ended thing, another question that we, like, it almost felt better before, like in season 7 when we could all be like, well, I mean, probably her and Jess, maybe they'll get back together one day and they'll realize like that they were right for each other or something, versus this, which did feel like saying to the fans, don't worry, like he still loves her, there's still hope, but actually it just felt like a kind of knife like, to the yeah. heart.
So what? You yeah. know, like we yeah. already knew that.
Yeah, that yeah. we've seen 7 seasons of that. Like that's
yeah, exactly. That's so clear. What happens now is the question we have, you
right,
know?
Right. What happens a decade later? Ground. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's kind of like how I oh, to be honest, like and oh it's getting so negative. I'm so sorry. I really did like this episode.
No, we're gonna do favorites in a second. Like, we'll be good.
Mm-hmm. But it is like my problem that I have with a lot of this is kind of this revival kind of spent so long reestablishing what had happened that they kind of forgot to tell us what happened next. Because it's like, you know, we spent so much time seeing old characters again, but what now? Like we hear what has happened to them in the years that have passed, but they aren't really allowed to have a story now, like other than obviously Lorelai and Luke and Emily and stuff. Like Lane, we see she's had this life and she plays the drums. That's the end. What happens to her story? She doesn't have a story anymore. Paris, she had these children. She had a divorce. She got this clinic. What happens to her story? She doesn't have a story anymore. And Jess, you know, went all through all these great things. He comes back. Like there's nothing forward for them. It's
there's
only
nothing
back.
New. Yeah. yeah.
And it's very
yeah, because
frustrating
it's,
to watch.
Because it's like a season 7 rewrite, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the,
yeah.
like, especially with
they
Rory.
They spend a lot of time writing history and not actually
yeah.
writing the show.
Or rewriting to get them, to get mm. the characters back to the place where Amy wanted them at the end of season 7. Like, essentially what happens with Rory this season if you think about the fact that she wanted to end up with Lorelai and Rory in this gazebo with Rory back in Stars Hollow and Rory being pregnant, like, the Rory's professional failures in this season make a lot more sense, because it's kind of about breaking down that character to get her back to this point. And then, and same with all the other things, but that's so depressing. Yeah, it is. It's so depressing. It's weird. I never thought I would kind of, and it's not to say that there aren't good moments in this, but like, and I feel like maybe I've made this worse with my incredibly negative thing, but that lot, like that last bit, it really does color the rest of the show and the rest of this revival in particular. So, yep, that's where we are. Should we talk about some fun things? Should we do some favorites? Should we let's wrap up our full discussion? Of course, we can't.
Love fest.
Yeah, we can't do anything without my made up cameo watch segment. So, because I'm sure you guys at home are playing along, things/people you may have recognized in this. One of the book wild hikers, book very important, is Stacey Oristano, who is Truly from Bunheads. There are a whole lot of Bunheads people in this revival. The first park ranger is Jason Ritter, who is Lauren Graham's love interest on Parenthood. And then the second park ranger is Peter Krause, is that how you say his name? Who is Lauren Graham's real life love interest, like they're together in real life. We get to see Miss Celine comes back, because that's cool. She's great.
I loved her.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't count as a cameo, but also like shout out to Kirk for being in this. And then there's that weird like Kiefer Sutherland whole bit about him just in name only, which is so bizarre, about Luke like being friends with him and inviting him to the wedding. Anyway, let's do favorite moments. I think a lot of this stuff we've probably covered, so we'll go through these quickly. For me, I will start off. I had a couple just laugh out loud lines, which were when Robert says to Finn, like the reason that he was punched is I said he was from New Zealand, which as an Australian made me laugh a lot. The Emily's line about the house where she says she's changed the name to like the seashell or something. And she says the previous owners called it the clam shack. I guess vagina house was taken. I think like Mike and I almost fell off the couch laughing at that, like RIP me. But actually my favorite moment of this is like a serious one is when you see Emily putting on those sneakers, just as a great representation of like her moving on and like being different, and I don't know, her wardrobe transition in across this revival was really well done, and that was just a great representation of sort of how far she had come. So Selena, what have you got? Last time, favorite moments.
I know. Yeah, there were two moments that really stood out to me this episode as being really strong and really beautiful. And one of them was at the beginning when Lorelai calls Emily. We already talked about that, but I just want to emphasize how important and beautiful and necessary I think that was. And then the Suki, Lorelai, Michelle debating back and forth banter in the kitchen, because that was probably the moment of this revival. And again, I feel like it's weird that I keep sort of looking for moments that remind me of the quote unquote real Gilmore Girls, because I guess that kind of speaks to how this overall doesn't. But this scene in the kitchen really was wonderful and really organic and felt really easy to watch and to enjoy. And I really, really enjoyed the three of them, the rapport they had. I still remember how happy I was when I realized that Michelle would be joining them at their inn when they first launched the inn. And I loved the moment very, very much.
And Pam?
I didn't write this down, but also Suki's little scene. I think that I was just so happy with it because it was perfect. And it was so nice to see that Melissa McCarthy was able to get back into this character so easily. And there was so much drama that started circling when everybody realized that she might not be coming back. So it's just really nice that they were able to do this, and Amy delivered, because, you know, she'd been saying that she had the perfect scene for her if she were to be able to make it work. And it was just really nice to see that come to fruition, because we almost didn't get it.
Yes, totally agree. Favorite characters for the last time. I mean, I didn't write her down, but obviously Emily, I think that goes without saying. I also picked Jess for reasons discussed. He's the best. Dean, because I loved that scene. And actually Lorelai, because I thought this was a really good episode for her. I really liked the resolution that we got for her story arc in this. I found her very frustrating in this revival, as people who have been listening will be very well aware. But she really felt to me like the real Lorelai, as it were, like Lorelai from the quote-unquote real Gilmore Girls. I know we keep coming back to this. Especially in that, in the last hour of this, like I mentioned, that bit where she leaves the pack and comes home, the scene with Luke and even, you know, all of the stuff with Emily. And yeah, I really liked the resolution for her. So I thought, you know, shake things up a little bit. I would choose Lorelai. And, Pam, you want to talk about Emily?
Yeah, I just think that Emily's storyline, her entire storyline, was so satisfying because I was so worried about how they would tie up her arc specifically, because Richard was not going to be here. And I was so satisfied. I just felt so at peace knowing where she ended up at the end of this. And I think that that's the thing that I was missing from somebody like Rory's storyline, which fell a little bit flat because it's so open-ended. But I think, like, out of all of the characters, I just feel good knowing that Emily is out there living her best life. And she just made me really happy.
Yeah. Oh, Emily.
Yeah, Emily got the resolution the emotional resolution that Rory was kind of denied. Like, we just don't know how Rory feels at the end. And I think that's part of the uncertainty. But my Emily was also definitely my favorite character, exactly because I felt like her story was complete but also open, you know, like you were saying, Merriman, like it left her life entering a new chapter, and we were like, oh, that's so exciting, her life goes on. I love that. I also really love Jess coming back. I loved his scenes with Luke. We didn't really talk about that, but I'm always a huge fan of those characters. And I also really liked Dean. I thought that was the best sort of little cameo that they managed to pull off. I didn't write down Lorelai and Luke, but I feel like they deserve to be, because we didn't actually talk about them hardly at all in this, but their moments were great. I really think that they, really the main thing that bothers me about this revival is Rory. I think that what they did with Lorelai and Emily and what they did with Lorelai and Luke, I love all that stuff. And I loved Luke in this particularly.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's definitely the Rory stuff that jumps out, but unfortunately the Rory stuff is what we must discuss. I think, you know, we've talked about the stuff we didn't like in this episode, so I don't think we need to finish on a negative. Instead, I'm going to force everyone to rank the episodes. And Selena, you can start. The four A Year in the Life episodes, worst to best. What have you got?
Worst to best. Okay, so our discussion of this episode has really made me sort of feel a little bit more negatively than I originally thought I did, but I think I'm going to keep my ranking the way it is. So the worst one, we talked about this last time, that's actually Spring. The second worst one is Summer. The third, the second favorite is Fall. And then my favorite was Winter, which was the first one. After this discussion though, I'm not totally sure that I wouldn't put Fall at the bottom of the list.
What?
So
no, that's too much. I don't know. It's not worse than Summer.
No. But I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying I did really enjoy Summer and Spring. Like I really did. But no, you're right. Actually, there was a lot of crap in those. So yeah. Spring, Summer, Fall, Winter.
Nice. And Pam, what about you?
In order of best to least favorite, it would be Winter, Fall, Spring, and then Summer.
Yeah, and I will jump on Pam's as well. That's the same. And I think that's the ranking that we both had when we first watched it. And so it's interesting it hasn't changed.
Yeah, and honestly, like, it's Winter and Fall probably share, like, the first place for me, despite, like, all of the open-endedness and, like, the unsettling factor that I feel. Like, I still feel like Fall was one of the best episodes.
So yeah, Winter and Spring kind of
could go either way for me.
No, Summer was worse.
Summer was so bad.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I liked Summer better.
I think the problem was also that Summer was when the fatigue set in. I'm looking at my reaction from right after I watched Summer, and I just am exhausted. I'm so tired.
Oh, I look so scary in, like, that whole reaction video that we decided we were going to film in summer.
Spoilers.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's it. That's it for our full discussion. That's it for our Gilmore Girls discussion. We are going to jump into listener feedback right now, and we have a whole lot. So we are just going to read through it all. We've got emails and tweets and everything from you guys. If you would like to get in touch with us about anything we talk about on this show, about ideas for shows you'd like us to watch in the future, we are totally open to that. You can find us on Twitter. We are at Hyperbole Hype. We are at Hyperbole Hype on Instagram. There's some fun stuff going up on there all the time. You can find us on hyperbole.com, where you can always leave us a comment on this podcast post. That's hyperbole.com. And you can email us hype@hyperbole.com. And if you want to get in touch another way or find more of our specials, you can go over to hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And if you hit the Hype Specials link in the nav bar there, you will get links to these specials, the specials that we're currently doing for The 100. We are rewatching that show right now. And it's maybe a little more controversial than our Gilmore Girls ones have been. I think that's fair to say.
In preparation. It's
very exciting. Yeah, it's exciting. Selena is inflicting all the pain on us because she knows what's happening for once, and Pam and I are suffering through the lack of knowledge.
But you know, but she's doing a great job. And you know, you know what I'm so impressed by is that you've still got theories, even though you've already seen it. I'm so impressed by that alone, because I feel like this we have to dance around a lot on our Gilmore Girls stuff, and Selena's like leading us astray but also making really insightful comments, so it's really cool.
Yeah, we are having so much fun doing that. And you know, we have really loved doing this. The Gilmore Girls thing was kind of a spontaneous, like, what if we took over the show with Gilmore Girls as a joke that turned into a real thing we did. But that's why we've done The 100, and we've had so much fun with them. So we are definitely planning to do more of these sort of rewatch specials in the future, hopefully with a less strict deadline. Like, you know, the same thing happened with The 100, because season 4 is premiering on the 1st of February. And we obviously wanted to watch Gilmore Girls before the Netflix revival came out. And next time, let's watch something that we don't need to watch in like 2 months. That'd be really great. But if you guys have a show you want to hear us rewatch, maybe something that we've talked about before, or something that, you know, you think we would enjoy, send us an email, send us a tweet. We would love to hear your thoughts on, you know, if you've been enjoying these, and maybe some that you would like to hear in the future, although we'll probably need a break and some counseling after we finish The 100. All right, let's jump into listener feedback. And these emails are in order of when we receive them. I just wanted to say, so these ones that we have at the start, actually, some of you guys sent them to us right after you finished the revival, or when we started these, the Netflix review episodes. So they're from a little while ago. But thank you so much. And we're glad we can finally include them. We weren't able to before, of course, because Selena was saying spoiler free. So first of all, we have an email here from Hayden, who says, I have so many feelings. I love the enthusiasm. Hayden says, let's start with the good. Loved seeing all the random town folks again. I didn't even recognize Miss Patty, and I was dying at the fact that the town bought Petal for Kirk to keep him from having a kid. Paris slayed me. She's the same old Paris 10 years later, and I was crying at the stairs thing in her house. I also loved how the end of the show was just so full circle. Rory has now become Lorelai, Logan is Christopher, or maybe the baby is Chewbacca's, we might never know. And Jess is Luke, he's obviously still in love with Rory, and she's just too blind to see what is meant to be. Wasn't so crazy about Lane was just kind of there. I feel like she didn't have a story arc other than just being around. I think they could have done more with her, but they decided to focus on other things instead. Tristan wasn't Chad Michael Murray. Why have him even mentioned? All of the cameos by people not originally in the show. Rachel Ray? Really? I get what they were trying to do, but it kept taking me out of the show. Same with Sutton Foster. I thought the town musical was funny, if not slightly too long, but I just kept focusing on the fact that it was Sutton Foster in the musical and nothing else. I feel like they should have let the original cast shine instead of having all these random people steal the show. Overall, I loved every second of the revival, and I'm going to do a rewatch to savor every last second of it. Thanks for doing all these specials. It's been amazing reliving one of my favorite shows.
Awesome. We also have an email from Fernanda Torres who says, "Hi girls, this contains Gilmore Girls spoilers." Oh, I guess it doesn't matter anymore. "So I have a lot of mixed feelings about the revival, but I'm going to focus on what bothered me the most. And what bothered me the most is always Logan. I'm sorry, but I just have to. So here is my I hate Logan rant." Thanks for giving that to me, Merma. "So much time wasted on his existence on this revival. Why? Rory is the worst when she's with him, and he is the worst always. I had a really difficult time liking revival Rory, by the way. He clearly still makes her anxious and insecure, and while holding the 'I'm always honest with you' and 'we have an agreement' lame excuses, keeps her in this hanging situation in what I can only describe as emotional abuse, all while cheating on his fiance. Inexcusable. It makes me want to jump into the screen and shake Rory out of her enchantment for this guy. She clearly wants more, and he can't give it to her, so just wake up and get out, Rory. Rory aside, what I truly cannot stand about him is the poor little rich boy act. Maybe it's because I'm a girl from a poor country, but I cannot and will not under any circumstance empathize with that. He's pretty much a coward drowning in white rich privilege. Also, really unpopular opinion, but his brigade friends and in that Omnia Paratus thing makes me cringe every single time. I always skip the you jump, I jump episode because it's just too much secondhand embarrassment for me. Sorry, it just feels awfully wasteful, snob, ridiculous, distasteful, condescending, too much free time, go build a house in Haiti instead of this, and worse, not at all fun. If you pay close attention, you can actually see the glamorized privilege dripping from their clothes as they march around town laughing about their own jokes. I otherwise love the show, not too sure about the revival yet though, but I think I will never understand Logan, nor do I want to. I just hope he isn't the father of Rory's baby. That would suck, but he is, isn't he? I'm just in denial. Dot, dot, dot." I really agree. I think this is a really, really good way of putting it. It's very frustrating to see someone like Rory, like, what's his face, Logan, walking around pretending that he has problems and that his life is really hard.
Yeah.
Because he's rich. And has a rich fiance and has another girl on the side.
And like, has no problems.
Get over yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we have another email here from Laura Morrow who says, "Hi ladies, just wanted to send my more spoiler-based thoughts. I screamed at my TV so loud when I heard the last four words and then quick cut to black. I will admit it made me angry for a brief moment because that is not an ending to Rory's story. Then I thought about it and could in theory predict the whole rest of Rory's life with Jess and Logan as the father, but them not being together, but I still want to like concrete answers for of what happens. That may make me a bad fan, but I need to know. I love Suki coming back so much. That scene made me smile and I was so happy it worked out. As a theater major, the musical just bored me. Sorry, lol. I wanted Jess to have more screen time and see him interact more with Rory. I think I would like to have the whole year in the life concept better if the series started with the last four words." This is Selena's
thoughts. That's what I just said. Yes.
Great minds, you two. Laura continues, "And we had a year or of Rory dealing with her baby drama and then an ending with her and Jess. Sorry for the long email, but you ladies are the only people that I chat Gilmore Girls with. Much love, Laura."
Oh, agreed. Never apologize for the long emails. Mm-hmm. We love them.
We do.
Yeah. I love how on the same page we are.
Yes, that would be much better. I think you should write that and just we pretend that that's the way it is.
There's some fan fiction to be written for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, we have an email here from Rachel McCarthy who said, "Hi girls, just wanted to give my two cents on the revival before you record full." Well, I hope this is fast. Obviously, this is way too long, so feel free to paraphrase or just read parts. But ha, take that, Rachel. I'm going to read the whole thing. You can't tell me what to do. I have mixed feelings on a year in the life overall. It was a lot of meh for me, but also it had such wonderful and poignant moments that I'm definitely happy it exists. I think the fatal flaw of the revival in general is that they are living in the past, and in terms of story, it just does not make sense that all of these characters have been standing still for the last 8 years. If this was set in 2008 or even just a few years later, it would have made more sense. For example, we spend 3 seasons watching Logan become his own person and love him or hate him, but he did distance himself from his father. Now he is unwilling to marry the girl he supposedly loves so that he can stick to the quote-unquote dynastic plan. And as if Luke and Lorelai spent 8 years together without talking about a wedding or kids. Obviously, these things aren't necessary, but they haven't agreed that they don't need these things. They just appear to have been in a coma for the last 8 freaking years. Rory's nothing short of a bad human being and a bad journalist, which is sad, as well as the idea that she would possibly keep the baby from Logan and raise it alone. The idea of anyone keeping a child from their parent, a cough, Anna, is despicable. Ending would have been more impactful if it had happened when Rory was in her early 20s, and unfortunately I found Bon Voyage a more satisfying and emotional conclusion than Fall. Also, it'd be cool if you guys would give the Gilmore Guys podcast a quick plug at the end. They have been doing episodes for every episode of Gilmore Girls, and soon they'll be coming out with episodes of Bonheads. Yeah, I mean, I feel like if yeah, you I'm know sure about
they need
us,
more listeners.
You know about Gilmore Guys, but sure, guys.
They, you know what, though? They out. Had a cameo in the...
They did.
Yeah.
I saw them.
Which
yeah.
is great. Good for them.
Yeah. There we go. There's a shout out. Okay, so Rachel continues. Anyway, sorry for the essay, guys. I just had to put all of my Gilmore Girls opinions somewhere. Love the show and looking forward to watching the hundreds that I can listen to your specials. P.S. Just so you guys don't think I hated everything, here's a list of things I loved a lot. Paris, Dean's cameo, I'm not crying, you are. Lauren and Emily's acting, Peter Krause's cameo, David Sutcliffe's immortal face, Deus Jess, Machinard, that is a great pun, I love it. Everything Kirk, Berta, and the secret bar. Well, thank you, Rachel, for that essay. Mm. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Molly Raisley says, hello, hype ladies. I wanted to write in to respond to your excellent discussion of Rory's book idea. I really wanted to love this plan because Jess suggested it, hashtag Team Jess, and I think it makes sense, write what you know. However, listening to your discussion and reflecting on this, I really think it's a bad idea. You've done a really great job of pointing out Rory's privilege on the podcast. And while Rory did grow up in a single-parent household, she had a whole town to support her, seemingly unlimited access to takeout food and books, a private school education, and then 4 years at Yale. And except for the New Yorker piece, she's made very little of herself, particularly given all of the resources and opportunities she's had. If she does move forward with this book, the real human interest story is Lorelai's. She's the one who overcomes adversity and does the best to make something of herself. So a book about the Gilmore Girls would mostly center on her, as does the TV series. And the poignancy and complicated relationship with her parents is not really something that Rory fully understands or would be able to convey in writing. I also think that if Rory moves forward, she'll have to get Emily's permission, something not even discussed on the show. So while I want to like this idea, I think it's a bad one, and I appreciate Selena's point that books are hard, and Rory might not be that good at writing it. The jury is still out on whether she was a good journalist. And I think the decision to drop the in the title was too cutesy, and Lorelai acquiesced too quickly without any real explanation in the final episode. This seemed out of character for her, and like a simple plot device. Sorry for the long email. I really didn't like the revival, as I think it brought to the surface a lot of things about the original series that were easier to ignore, like fat-shaming, homophobia, entitledness, cheating, etc. But I love listening to you three discuss it, so I appreciate all the work you've put into these specials. Happy hyping! I think that's fair. I think that's a good criticism, and I agree with the point about the book that, I mean, again, with going back through the series, Lorelai is the one... Like, she's the driving force of the story, and it was interesting to watch the show and wonder how Rory was going to move forward. But since she hasn't, that interest kind of falls away a little bit.
Yeah, and it's a good point about asking Emily. I feel like Rory and Emily's relationship was kind of dropped.
Yeah.
Especially towards the end of the revival, which is a shame.
Mm-hmm. We have one last email here from Jacqueline Mantel, who says, Gilmore Girls has been my go-to show for every mood. I love turning it on to watch hardcore or just let it melt into the background while cleaning the house. Either way, I will always love Gilmore Girls. The revival has been amazing, but not exactly what I wanted. On another note, have any of you read Lauren Graham's book, Talking as Fast as I Can? It's wonderful. She has bits of Gilmore Girls from start to end, including the revival. A must read or listen. I'd love to know your thoughts if you've read it. Thanks for the show and keep up the great work. This is still on my to-read list, but I'm
yeah,
so
yeah,
excited.
I'm on Audible because I want the audiobook.
Oh, interesting.
Does she read it?
Talking. I think she does, yeah.
I keep seeing this in bookstores. I might actually pick this up because it looks kind of light and I need something like this to read. So I'll read it and I'll report back on hype.
There you go.
Okay, we have some tweets to end up from you guys. Thank you so much for everyone who has been sending in all of their thoughts. We have one from Emmy Foss to get us started who says, I still don't know completely how I feel. Just blessed Luke and Lorelei are still endgame. Couldn't have survived another skins fire.
Like the skins, the TV show.
Yeah, but what happened? What? Okay. Yeah,
they just ended the main ship.
Oh, I watched Skins. Emmy, please tweet with clarification.
Maybe she meant.
But anyway, we got the point.
Yeah. Maybe Skins is a show that we should watch on this show. That's a little risque.
Skins is not appropriate.
Yeah, I was gonna say. take it back. Maybe Misfits. Similar but different.
I've seen all of Skins, but yeah.
Oh, it is on Audible. I just checked. I'm going to download Lauren Graham's reading herself book right now, and I'm going to listen to it.
Do you think she reads it really quickly to keep in the
theme
of
the... Well, I hope so.
Hilarious.
Anyway, so tweeting continues. The Lady Ash says, Lorelai struggling with her bag was just hilarious, and then using the tape to add stuff on, I loved it. Anything Jess. His concern and care for Luke was so heartwarming, and that look he gives Rory through the window, damn. I'm not a fan of Jess clinging on, but I get why they did it. That acting, though, bravo, Milo. Where Rory ends up writing is so beautiful, and the shot of Herman when she enters the office, gah, my heart. I rather watch the summer musical than the Logan Fantastic Adventure ride. Same. Okay, this is filler to the extreme. And the Wizard of Oz goodbye? Cue my eye roll. Rewatching Chris' scene knowing the ending was nice. I watched Rory's face the whole time and it is clearly there. I think when Rory ran into Dean, she wished the baby was his. And that life she could have had if she hadn't been selfish. Sookie, so happy to see her again. This show isn't the show without her. Emily in this episode was perfection. From relaxing at the beach to traumatizing show attendees, the wedding was fun but felt weird with people missing. The ending really upset me, even on my rewatch months later. I can't help but see the show differently now, knowing that it was meant to end there. Just a full circle of unplanned pregnancies that caused the women in Stars Hollow to give up their dreams. Wow. Wow. And that Rory was originally meant to be 22-ish. Jeez, it just makes me sad. The show was a great watch, though, and I don't regret it. There's a lot of good in it, in spite of some of the flaws. I have a place in my heart for Stars Hollow. Yeah, no, that's that one sentence, the cause women to give up on their dreams, kind of like echoing what you said, Mama. It's like, yeah, it's you really want to like it, but that just kind of chills you, you know?
Oh, you can finally read my Why I Hate Everything article now, which is actually about this.
I will.
Yeah.
Okay, here's a tweet from Laura who says, I think the Sookie scene is one of my favorite scenes in the entire four episodes. I loved the expansion plot as well.
Mariah Lovegood says, I wasn't spoiled, but I knew from the start of the convo with Chris that Rory was pregnant. I wish for different final four words.
And finally, we have a comment from Gabby S. who says, in defense of Rory, here it comes, guys. Humans make mistakes, and who says you need to have your life figured out at 32? Her mom was older when she finally gave Chris up. I don't understand why everyone hates her so much. Sure, it was wrong, but at the end, she finally let go of Logan. That said, he should still know about the baby. Hopefully, they'll co-parent from afar. Also, can you imagine Emily's face when they tell her? She'll get to be involved in this baby's life at least, and she finally found something for her. It's sad Richard wasn't there, but I'm glad in the end she found something that she liked. Walking out on the ladies was awesome. Talk about character growth. She kind of did what Lorelai did. She moved out, she moved on, new town. And Jess still totally deserves that spinoff.
Oh my god, yes!
Also, also his relationship with Luke, yeah. Love them. Okay, that's it. One final thing. Paris is everything. I was so glad to see her. Also, the whole plot with Michelle was amazing. I just want to say, like, just to be clear, I don't hate Rory at all. And I actually think a lot of my disappointment comes because I really love Rory and I really want her good things for her. And I really feel like the Rory of the earlier seasons kind of became a victim of relationship stories. And I still kind of feel like she deserves more than that. And I think most of my frustration comes because I don't understand why the Rory that I like is making these terrible choices.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, like, I don't know. I guess I haven't ever said this on the show, but like, I have said that I've been watching Gilmore Girls since I was like 12. So in a way, like Rory she's always been one of my favorite. That's what everybody says. Like, but she's always been one of my heroes. Like, you know, fictional heroes. Like when I was growing up, the idea of Rory was inspirational to me because she really knew what she wanted. So I think like being older and watching back, a lot of her flaws that I was able to set aside when I was younger, they kind of pop out. And then the revival, just like everything we say, like negative about her, it's just because we care. But I don't think anybody on this show hates her. So, yeah.
Oh, we love her. Mm-hmm. That's why the revival makes me so sad for her, because I kind of wanted more for her in that, not that this is a bad ending for someone, but that this doesn't seem like a satisfying ending for Rory. Based on all the things that she wanted, you know, that's why it hurts, because we love her. Like, we want her to have everything.
Right,
and
right.
And it feels like, and also, she's not going to get that.
And also because apparently we've all decided that I am, in a way, Rory. It makes me sad because I would never want my life to end up that way, too. So it's just, it's sad all around.
Justice for Pam.
Justice for Pam.
Yeah. I mean, but also now, like, should we campaign for Netflix to pick up that Windward Circle spin-off? Right, I mean, yes. I guess it wouldn't be called that.
Although,
now,
unfortunately,
just
I think...
going to find his father now would be...
Unfortunately, I think Milo's too wrapped up in This Is Us, but...
Yeah, it's just been renewed for two more seasons, right? So that's unfortunate. Right.
He should just make the new show called This Is Jess.
This Is Jess. That's it. It would be amazing.
It's just him, like, reading, kind of going around fixing people's problems.
I mean, can we just, like, let ourselves indulge for one brief moment? There's one shot in the revival of him sitting in Lorelai's house in, like, this posh armchair reading a book. And I'm like,
I would watch a show
like
this.
I don't know where he is. That's like my aesthetic.
Well,
right there.
Well, that's the life. Luke and Lorelai finally move in to the old, what is it? The old house that they wanted.
The Twickham house?
Yeah. And then Rory and Jess get married and they live in the Gilmore house, like the Lorelai house. And that's,
oh my God,
that's that scene. It's a foreshadowing of what's to come.
Yes. And Jess keeps his long hair and rocks his awesome
bomber
jacket
that
he has.
But never needs to use his army duffel again, because now he's found a home. He doesn't need to.
Oh, so true.
You know.
So true. Yes, this is Jess coming to Netflix in 2017. If only. Well, that brings us, unfortunately, I think, that brings us the end of our Gilmore Girls rewatch, revival, weird hype takeover, etc. thing. Thank you guys so much for coming on this journey with us. This is, I think this will be like, 12 episodes we've done about Gilmore Girls at this point, so it has been a journey. And we have enjoyed
it
so much.
It's been fun. Can I just emphasize that it's been so much fun? And I think a lot of the listeners came into that as well, how like the revival sort of did some unfortunate things, but you still really love it and you can still really appreciate the show for what it is and just this amazing journey of these great women. And I'm so happy that I finally watched it. It really connected with me.
I'm so happy to hear you say that. It makes me like feel so good. And I love that, like, I mean, like, I feel like we opened up a lot on this journey, but I love that our listeners were able to open up as well about how the plot affects them. And we had like some really good discussion, and you guys listening were a huge part of that.
Yeah. And hopefully you had fun too. It's, you know, it's been up and down. And like Pam said, any of the problems that we've had with this come from a place of love. Hopefully you guys felt that too, that definitely Pam and I, this is one of our favorite shows. And I think Selena has also really loved it. So, you know, it's not about like picking apart something from a place of, I don't know, like dislike or whatever. It's just, you want to critically engage with the stuff that you enjoy. And, you know, we wouldn't have done this if we didn't enjoy it, because like, it's been a lot of time and effort to put into it. And we really appreciate all of the people who watch for the first time with us. That was so gratifying to see so many of you say, like, you're going to watch along with us. Plus, everyone who did the rewatch or like listen to the episodes in the lead up to the revival to remind them what happened. It was just really nice to see all the different levels of engagement. And, you know, these are characters that obviously mean a lot to people and they mean a lot to us. And like Pam said, I think that generated a lot of really interesting discussion. And it's been really fun. It's been a great time. So thank you guys. And thank you, Selena, for doing this. I don't think I've said that yet.
I think we kind of roped her into it because we were like, we can't just be the two of us being like insane and taking on all of these episodes. But
yeah,
you've been a trooper because
it was crazy. It was a huge, it was a huge commitment. Like, I'm not going to lie.
No,
like seven
I believe it.
Regular sized seasons, you know, is a tough, it's a tough thing to get through. I definitely had to sideline. And I think that kind of became obvious on hype too, that I've kind of had to sideline a lot of the other things that I would normally like watch or read or whatever. So it's going to be interesting to sort of suddenly have time to watch other stuff.
Yeah, and to not have to quickly click away when you see the words Gilmore Girls on Twitter or something.
That too. That
so
too,
that must be nice. But, you know, if you have just been tuning in for these, make sure to check out our 100 specials. We have done the first two seasons and we are already fighting about all the ships and all the characters. So it's great. look, basically, whatever your ship is, we've got it covered because there is a spectrum of opinions and whatever your thoughts on like certain plot developments, we've probably got those covered too, because we basically agree on nothing except that we very much enjoy the show. So again, coming from a place of enjoyment and Pam and I having fun sort of racing through those. Plus the seasons are a lot shorter, so that's very helpful. And also make sure to listen to Hype. We do a weekly entertainment podcast. We talk about all of the latest news for TV shows, things on Netflix. I mean, if there's any Gilmore Girls hints of a season two or of that Windward Circle spinoff, you'll hear about it on Hype first, but we also talk about the latest news in movies and books, what else we've been reading and watching. We do a bunch of recommendations and we are about to launch a Patreon. And if you want more information on that, you can find us on Twitter at Hypeable Hype, where we keep you updated on all of that kind of stuff. So that's it. I don't really know how to end this, guys. It feels weird. It's just...
We should end it in song. Like, we should have a camp. Cue the Carole King.
Yeah, for real. We need like a campfire sing-along or something.
I mean, that could be arranged.
But yeah. Maybe as a... Maybe no, as an extra. People would pay us probably not to do that.
People would probably turn it off and like never listen to us again. But we'll insert it here for your pleasure. Maybe.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll be back with our regular episodes of Hype, which are on this feed. If you want to find that stuff, make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes to keep up to date on everything, and we'll be back with our The 100 Season 3 special is the next thing that's on the way. And until then, I'm Marima.
I'm Selena.
And I'm Pamela.
And now we can cue the Carole King.
Goodbye. Now that we're